Second hand, just wave goodbye. And know the light has left his face, but he can't recall just where or why. So there was really nothing to it.
Listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Ripples of the San Francisco hotel workers' lockout have begun hitting other major cities. Six hotel workers were arrested in Boston Wednesday after joining nearly 85 others at a sit-in in the lobby of Hyatt Regency Hotel in Downtown Crossing. The protesters, mostly hotel service workers, were dispersed to the streets by police. Outside, they chanted, "No justice in San Francisco, no peace in Boston." More than 2,600 hotel workers in San Francisco remain locked out of their jobs after hotel owners refused to meet their demands for a two-year contract and better health care.
Testing the limits of the union's conflict of interest clause, the St. Paul Pioneer Press newspaper in St. Paul, Minnesota, suspended two investigative reporters for attending a MoveOn.org concert. The reporters lost 3 days' pay and benefits after management said the paper's ethics policy bars them from activities that would conflict with their employment, like the Bruce Springsteen Vote for Change concert. The reporters argued they did nothing wrong, first, because MoveOn.org is nonpartisan, and second, because they don't cover politics. The paper, though, is refusing to back down. Minnesota Newspaper Guild Executive Officer Mike Sweeney.
We filed a grievance asking the company to rescind the suspension, return the money, and any other lost benefits. They have refused, so we will be moving, well, I've already moved the matter to arbitration, which is a hearing before a third party through that way to get the money restored.
Comcast is being called upon to adopt public interest provisions in pricing, customer service, workers' rights, community access TV, and open access internet. The code of conduct is being presented to the nation's largest cable company by a coalition of groups made up of the Communication Workers of America, the Coalition of Labor Union Women, Jobs for Justice, and others. The CWA has long been involved with holding Comcast accountable for labor issues and sponsors a website with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers called ComcastWatch.com.
Union electricians and carpenters are picketing the construction site of a new Kroger supermarket in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The workers, represented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 252, are upset that the contractor is using out-of-town labor to get around a higher prevailing wage for local union members. They say that Bosselman Corporation isn't paying the level of wages set by the U.S. Labor Department for the local market in Ann Arbor. The union is asking members to boycott the store when it opens.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Social Security reform, without minimizing it, is of dire importance to African Americans. A recent study by the AARP reveals that 82.3% of African Americans, more than any other in the age group of 65 or older, rely on Social Security for retirement income. Of this group, 52.8% rely on benefits for 90% of their income. Retired African Americans receive only 23.9% of interest income. That's less than half of what is received by all Americans in the same age group.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
After a recent congressional vote on the Freedom to Read Protection Act, one angry member said, "You win some, and some get stolen." He was a Republican, defying George W., John Ashcroft, and his own party's top leadership in Congress, all of whom lobbied furiously to defeat this act, which sought to ensure one of our most basic American liberties, the right to keep government snoops and bullies from secretly spying on the reading habits of perfectly innocent citizens. What could be more mom and apple pie than that? Bush, Ashcroft, and gang, however, had undermined this fundamental freedom with a nasty provision they tucked into their infamous liberty-busting USA Patriot Act in 2001. It allows federal agents to get a secret order from a secret court to walk into any public library or bookstore and demand the records of any and all patrons without showing anyone, even the court, any evidence that the people being investigated are involved in any criminal activity whatsoever. It's jackbooted autocratic power like this that led to the American Revolution. And just as in 1776, today's librarians, bookstore owners, writers, and freedom-loving people of all political stripes have risen up against the Bushites' authoritarian, un-American intrusion into our privacy. This grassroots uprising led to the Freedom to Read Act, which would have halted the intrusion. The good news is that the act passed. The sad news is that the GOP hierarchy then cheated. They held the vote open beyond the time allowed by the rules, taking an extra 23 minutes while the leaders broke the arms of 9 Republicans, forcing them to switch votes, thus defeating the act. In other words, the Bushites stole it, and they also stole an important piece of our liberties. This is Jim Hightower saying, but we've only begun to fight this insult to our democracy. To join the uprising, call the American Library Association, 800-545-2433.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big evil taco is haunting me. You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get ScorePower from Equifax.com. ScorePower gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get Score Power at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way from coast to coast. For that matter, all the way around this world on all sorts of radio stations and the internet and various satellite feeds and all over the place. Welcome to the Tom Hartman radio program. I'm Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom this what is at least locally where I'm at, a really beautiful looking Friday. It's looking like we're going to have a pretty fantastic weekend for us. A couple of programming notes. We do have a guest on the phone here, so I want to get to him real quick. But before we do, just a couple of pieces of programming here. Number one is Tom. Oh, that little bugger. You know what he's doing? He's over on C-SPAN 2 right this moment from noon till 3. Eastern time. But coincidentally, that's the time that we're on here at the Tom Hartman radio program, noon to 3 Eastern time. So Tom's over on the C-SPAN 2. I don't know what he's doing. I assume he's taking questions. I think he's in a panel of some sort, getting ready to get into some raving arguments with some lunatic fringe right-wing whatevers. And then even more exciting, this is going to be fun next week. You know, folks who never get to see Tom in his studio, what I understand, if I have not been misled by this, next Friday, Tom will be broadcasting his show from here as normal, right where I'm sitting right now behind the stainless steel working man's microphone. But he is going to be doing it. They're going to bring in the C-SPAN equipment and set up their satellite equipment and all the fun stuff. And he'll be broadcast on C-SPAN, too. So that'll be coming up next Friday. Very exciting. Very exciting. And, you know, it just may be launching Tom off on a fantastic movie career. And who knows? Maybe those autographs I've been getting him to sign on the blank checks that I put underneath all the other stuff, maybe they'll become valuable at some point. We'll find out. Okay, enough of me, enough of Tom. Let's get to somebody who's very important. On the phone with us right now is Mr. Craig Eisendrath, a senior fellow at the Center for International Policy and an adjunct professor at Temple University, served as a U.S. Foreign Service officer with the Department of State, a college dean, executive director of the Pennsylvania Humanities Council, co-founder of the National Constitution Center. He's got a bunch of books that we could go on. They kind of include U.S. intelligence after the Cold War, The Phantom Defense, America's Pursuit of the Star Wars Illusion, Crisis Game, Novel of Cold War, and goes on and on. This guy's got more credits to him than a Hollywood movie, speaking of movies. And he can speak to an awful lot of things, including intelligence gathering and intelligence failures, the neocon movement, all this other stuff. With that said, hello, Mr. Eisendrath.
Hello.
And thank you very, very much for joining us today.
Thanks very much for having me.
Anything that you want to add? Because remember how, you know, I mean, people are going to remember you by what they hear on this radio show for today, so... If you need to puff yourself up more, take a moment and do it.
I don't.
That's quite a...
I just want to look down at the floor.
That's a very impressive resume, though. It is, and you deserve to be congratulated. And pat yourself on the back. Most people have a hard time getting out of bed, much less doing all the things that you've done. I guess we're here to start off, talk about foreign affairs, maybe some of the neocons, intelligence gathering, also take some time here. Oh, by the way, anybody out there wants to join in, you have questions or comments for Mr. Eisendrath, 1-866-889-8894, 866-889-8894. So let me just jump right into the muddle here, Craig, if I could. And I want to start with Iran simply because they seem to be the new focal point of who we have to go attack next. I don't know if that's realistic of my interpretation or not. But is Iran actually pursuing nuclear weapons at the moment?
It's very, very hard to tell. They're going through a lot of maneuvers that look as if they could.
Right.
And I think the United States is very nervous. What we want is what we call intrusive inspections.
Right.
That is where the International Atomic Energy Agency goes in there and really looks over the stuff and can make a straight decision. We've not done well with Iran, you know, diplomatically. We toppled their government back in 1954. We put in the Shah. When the Khomeini government came in, we were, of course, the enemy.
Yeah.
And then we called them part of the axis of evil.
Yeah.
And even in the last couple of weeks on the negotiation, John Bolton, who's the Undersecretary of State, has been insulting everybody in sight. Nevertheless, I think we're starting to see the light that we're going to follow the Europeans, who are really not in this kind of insulting manner, who are negotiating with Iran. I think we'll finally will get inspections, and I suspect that this crisis will blow over.
Okay, well, let me ask you then, too, from your perspective, is it credible, is there any credible way that we can separate pursuit of fuel-grade processing of, I guess, plutonium here we're talking about?
Yeah.
Is there any way to distinguish between just pursuing fuel-grade processing as opposed to going the extra steps and you have to process
if you're on the ground.
Okay.
That's what we're saying. You can't do it from a distance. That's
right.
Why we want to get in there with the International Atomic Energy Agency and really take a look at what they're doing.
Right.
At that point, we can decide. You see, Iran is a signatory to the 1968 Non-Proliferation Pact.
Right.
That says they're not going to acquire nuclear weapons.
Yeah.
However, it does not say they're not going to acquire the capacity to create nuclear power.
But they actually
have... That's all they're doing.
Well,
We've got to make a... under the get on-site inspections to determine whether that's true.
Okay, now under the Nuclear Proliferation or Non-Proliferation Treaty, they actually are specifically, countries are specifically given the right, so to speak, to pursue peaceful nuclear power.
They are indeed. They are indeed, but they're not given the right to go after nuclear bombs.
Okay.
So, and, you know, there's, and it's been pretty successful if you think about it. You know, here we are, what, like 60 years after Hiroshima.
Right.
We've got a limited number of nuclear states.
Yep.
You know, England, France, Russia, China, United States, Pakistan, India, and Israel. That's it.
You said
not
India
bad
twice.
For, you know, for 60 years.
No, that's...
This treaty has worked. What worries me, though, is we're now going ahead developing a new nuclear device. You know that...
Right.
This is the...
Bunker buster
thing.
Yep.
And we're going to be wanting to test it.
Right.
We're not giving the world the right signal. If we want to hold countries to this non-proliferation pact, we can't go ahead making new weapons and testing them and so forth. It's exactly the wrong signal at the wrong time.
Well, now, this may be a silly question in a way. Do we allow other nations to come in and inspect our nuclear facilities?
We certainly don't.
We don't. Okay. I didn't think so, but I wasn't
absolutely
sure.
And you know, it's interesting. We're very, very wary of inspection. I mean,
right.
One of the reasons, for instance, that we haven't signed on to the Bacteriological Convention is we don't want anybody nosing around our pharmaceutical facility.
That's right.
So we're all for inspecting other people, but not for being inspected ourselves.
So it's kind of running into a tough spot there. Do you see, we got somebody, I want to get to the phone calls because I really like our listeners. Well, Craig, we have some of the most intelligent listeners. No, not some. We have the most intelligent.
The most.
And we've actually got a monopoly on intelligent listeners for all of Radio Land here on the Tom Hartman Radio Show. And so I want to get to the phone because somebody's on there. But before we do, is there hope for a, I guess, let me just use the word, peaceful resolution to this question of Iranian nuclear ambition, or is this something that we should be kind of on our edge waiting for the bombs to fall any moment?
I don't think, for one thing, the bombs are going to fall. Iran does have missile capability, but it's intermediate range we're talking about. Oh, say 1,200 kilometers, nothing even close to hitting the United States. So we're not, I wouldn't put on a tin pot.
Okay, not yet, anyway. Good.
And I think the Iran is sufficiently hooked into the economics of the European Union and their as clients that if there's sufficient amount of pressure, even if they might have had an inkling to go for nuclear weapons, that they won't do it.
Okay.
I think this is a resolvable crisis.
Great. Okay, can we head to the phone then?
Sure.
All right, excellent. On the line with us is Rick from Grand Rapids, Michigan. How you doing, Rick?
Fine. This is Rama.
Yes, it is, sir.
And I'd rather call the guest by his first name, if you wouldn't mind.
Craig.
Greg.
How are you both?
It took my wife 6 months for the last name, so don't worry about it.
Well, this is the first time I've called Rama when Tom hasn't been there, but I thank you for the compliment. As a listener, I enjoy being called intelligent.
Absolutely.
But I have a question, if I could, regarding these hostages that are being taken and the horrible beheadings.
Yeah.
Now, my question is this. Now, I realize that these are crazy, barbaric people that are doing this. But correct me if I'm wrong, it seems to me as if the British government and the United States government, and those are the two largest contingents there, are taking this somewhat macho approach, you know, that we don't deal with terrorists. But yet, it just seems to me as if they're being rather callous in not even trying to do anything about it. It's just like these people are taken, the government condemns it for happening, then they say we're not going to do anything, and then some of them are released, but then some of them are beheaded, and it's on video. Am I wrong in thinking that the American and the British governments, although they don't want to appear to be weak, are wrong for not even trying to, I don't know if I want to use the word negotiate, but try to do something to get these people released, you know, safely?
It's a very, very tricky situation, because if you do give in and give concessions, in some sense, it encourages the other side to take more hostages. That is, the more hostages they get, the more concessions they get. So it is a difficult bind. I share with you a lot of concern that we may be a little callous, that we should negotiate more. But I think it is a very difficult position our government's in.
But when they don't give in, the kidnappings and beheadings still continue. So that's not working either.
No, it isn't. But it doesn't work when you do it at the same time, because then you give a whole lot of concessions. That is, you back off from, let's say, making assaults, killing off the terrorists, stopping them, and so forth. So it's a very difficult bind to be in.
Well, now,
they know it, and we know it.
Now, in a civilian circumstance, under most circumstances, they would do some negotiation, though, with hostage takers. Am I not correct there?
I think you are, and I have been critical myself that I think we have been somewhat callous. But I am sympathetic to the situation that we're in. That is, it is a very difficult bind. I think you can be totally tough and just say, you know, kill them off if you want to. I wouldn't do that. I would talk. I'd say, look, what would save their lives? Is it a condition we can meet?
Okay, yeah. Okay, hey, Rick, thanks a lot for the phone call. Appreciate that.
Thank you.
Craig, we're coming up on a hard break here. We're going to be gone for just a few minutes. Can you hang around and stick with us till the bottom half of the hour?
Absolutely.
Because I want to prime you for the question that I'm going to ask here. It's basically going to be, what's a neocon? I mean, what are we looking at when we talk about a neocon?
Yeah,
and
sure.
I'll leave folks with that thought. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. We'll be back in a jiffy.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Talk about unsanitary. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums or wear a dust mask. Imagine vacuuming your house wearing a dust mask? Friends, try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. It's 99.99% dust-free. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200.
For more than 27 years, the Progressive magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. Author and broadcast personality Studs Terkel calls In These Times his bi-weekly tonic. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. 1-800-827-0270.
The following phone call was not recorded on February 30th, 2004.
Thank you for calling about DirecTV. My name is Lynn. How can I help you?
Thank you, sir. Thank goodness you're there. You've got to help me. My cable company is raising their rates again. I don't know what I'm going to do.
It's okay, ma'am. I'm here to help. I'm glad you called.
They're taking away our favorite channels.
Ma'am, I get that all the time. Let me help you right away. Would you like to get over 125 channels of your favorite programming for only $39.99?
Will I still be able to get my local channels?
Absolutely. And because you called American Satellite right now, you can get up to a four-room DirecTV system for free and free professional installation for all new customers with an annual programming commitment.
Oh, thank you. My husband, Nick, is going to be so happy.
Call American Satellite at 1-800-505-1542. That's 800-505-1542. Call now and ask how you can get total choice for only $29.99 a month for the first 6 months. A $60 value. 800-505-1542. Add $4.99 a month per second and each additional receiver. Offer ends July 17, 2004. Call.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. We got a very busy gentleman named Craig Eisendrath, who's been really great enough to take some time out of his busy day and his busy life to spend a little time with us talking about some foreign affairs issues and neocons here. And Craig, as we headed off into the break, I was told you when we come back, I'm going to ask you, what's a neocon? And let me just rephrase the question just a little bit. What's a neocon, and should we be afraid of them?
I think we should be. Neocons are people who talk about using force first in diplomacy, not even second, third, but maybe fourth or fifth. These are guys that think the United States should go it alone and not work in cooperation with other countries. We shouldn't be parts of international organizations. We shouldn't sign international treaties. These are the guys that say we shouldn't sign the comprehensive test ban. We shouldn't sign the small arms agreement. We shouldn't sign the Bacteriological Convention, even at a time we're supposed to be dealing with terrorists.
Right.
I think it's also true with these guys that they think the center of American foreign policy should be the Defense Department and not the Department of State, which I think is a big mistake.
Yeah. Now,
I think in the process they create a kind of an atmosphere of war and belligerency and force, which is dangerous not only for other countries, but for the United States as well.
Yes, as in war can be spelled with four letters, I-R-A-Q, I guess, nowadays. How far back does this movement, this neocon movement, go? Because it sounds to me that the guys, let me get my thoughts here. I associate the neoconservative movement, the new conservative movement, as being coming from these guys at the American Enterprise Institute. And this is Dick Cheney, Paul Wolfowitz, Manana Manana. We've all probably heard the list several times over. But they hardly see, it seems to me like they're just bringing up into the modern age something that came out of World War II. Am I incorrect? I mean, is this an attitude that actually goes back into the 40s and is just now gaining power, or am I missing something here?
I don't think so. I think I see these people cutting their teeth pretty much in the Reagan period and then not being in power when they wanted to be during Clinton's time, and really chafing and being very upset, and finally coming in.
We're talking,
the Cheneys, the Wolfowitzes, the Boltons, the Pearls, the Fifes, the, you know, all these people now who have power really cut their teeth during the Reagan period and often are traceable back to that time. These are people who are not really Republicans. They're something quite different. They're radicals in a way that I think we have not seen in power in the United States before.
Are they as pro-Israeli as we get led to believe?
A number of them have experience as lobbyists for the Likud, that is, you know, the right-wing party.
Yeah.
So you do have a fairly strong Israeli support there.
So how much then people talk about all the various reasons for going into Iraq, and I think if you bundle them all together, the one that seems to represent to me the biggest reason is the oil bit, but there's also the possibility of the euro being used for an oil, but also people have thrown in, I noticed both Kerry and Bush did it when in their in the debate where they talked about the Iraq situation was important because of security to Israel. How much how much did Israel or consideration of Israel play in our invasion of Iraq, Craig?
I'd say probably about 5%.
Very little,
I mean,
then, huh?
To give a number. I think the main reasons were oil. The main reasons were securing a place for permanent American bases, which we're now building in Iraq.
Right.
I was fascinated when the president had his open press conference in April, which was 1 hour long, that the OIL word was never used, either, by the way, by the president or by the press.
Yeah.
And yet everybody knew that was what it was. It wasn't weapons of mass destruction. It wasn't Osama bin Laden working with Saddam Hussein. That's all been proven to be a complete fairy tale.
All right. Well, Craig, we're coming up to the bottom of the hour here, and I want to thank you so much for spending some time. Any place that we can get hold of you on the Internet?
You can get it, you know, under my name.
Okay.
Right there.
All right.
Also, I'd love to come back and talk to you again about anything on the foreign policy scene.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. A consumer alert was recently reported in a leading consumer testing magazine. It warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. I would never make a bagless vacuum because they're filthy. My 8-pound Oreck XL is hypoallergenic. Try one free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200, 1-800-989-4200. You'll breathe easier knowing it's an Oreck XL.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Ripples of the San Francisco hotel workers' lockout have begun hitting other major cities. Six hotel workers were arrested in Boston Wednesday after joining nearly 85 others at a sit-in in the lobby of Hyatt Regency Hotel in Downtown Crossing. The protesters, mostly hotel service workers, were dispersed to the streets by police. Outside, they chanted, "No justice in San Francisco, no peace in Boston." More than 2,600 hotel workers in San Francisco remain locked out of their jobs after hotel owners refused to meet their demands for a two-year contract and better health care.
Testing the limits of the union's conflict of interest clause, the St. Paul Pioneer Press newspaper in St. Paul, Minnesota, suspended two investigative reporters for attending a MoveOn.org concert. The reporters lost 3 days' pay and benefits after management said the paper's ethics policy bars them from activities that would conflict with their employment, like the Bruce Springsteen Vote for Change concert. The reporters argue they did nothing wrong, first, because MoveOn.org is nonpartisan, and second, because they don't cover politics. The paper, though, is refusing to back down. Minnesota Newspaper Guild Executive Officer Mike Sweeney.
We filed a grievance asking the company to rescind the suspension, return the money, and any other lost benefits. They have refused, so we will be moving, well, I've already moved the matter to arbitration, which is a hearing before a third party through that way to get the money restored.
Comcast is being called upon to adopt public interest provisions in pricing, customer service, workers' rights, community access TV, and open access Internet. The code of conduct is being presented to the nation's largest cable company by a coalition of groups made up of the Communication Workers of America, the Coalition of Labor Union Women, Jobs for Justice, and others. The CWA has long been involved with holding Comcast accountable for labor issues and sponsors a website with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers called ComcastWatch.com.
Union electricians and carpenters are picketing the construction site of a new Kroger supermarket in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The workers, represented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 252, are upset that the contractor is using out-of-town labor to get around a higher prevailing wage for local union members. They say that Bosselman Corporation isn't paying the level of wages set by the U.S. Labor Department for the local market in Ann Arbor. The union is asking members to boycott the store when it opens.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Social Security reform without minimizing it is of dire importance to African Americans. A recent study by the AARP reveals that 82.3% of African Americans, more than any other in the age group of 65 or older, rely on Social Security for retirement income. Of this group, 52.8% rely on benefits for 90% of their income. Retired African Americans receive only 23.9% of interest income. That's less than half of what is received by all Americans in the same age group.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
There's a brand new dance just hit this town. It'll make you feel so good. This dance is called Around.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman, the radio program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman, the man, my boss, your favorite host, one of the most lucid and certainly a very brilliant individual. Tom Hartman is actually, he's over on C-SPAN 2 right now. If you really insist, I guess, because I'm his second string, you're allowed to go watch and listen to Tom on C-SPAN 2. That's if you want to be a traitor to the radio. Go on, turn the TV on. That's right. Turn your brain into mush, but at least it'll be mush with Tom. He's on C-SPAN, too. I guess this is a Heritage Foundation-sponsored forum that they've got going on there, which means Tom is probably having to, like, gouge eyes out and holler really loud to get himself heard above the fray. But he's got, oh, by the way, yeah, next Friday, a week from today, this is even more exciting. Right from where I'm sitting right now behind Tom's stainless steel working man's microphone, they're going to have the C-SPAN equipment, all their trucks and their satellite equipment, and they're going to be sitting in here pointing their big fat cameras right in Tom's mug while he does the show right from here. Right from the wonderful home studio of the Tom Hartman radio program. And it's a wonderful studio indeed. I don't know how much they'll pan around, but it's kind of fun to sit in here. It's a lot of somebody like me that has the attention span of a I have a short attention span. It's basically measured in quanta, It's cool. Anyway, it's an exciting time for Tom and the Tom Hartman radio program nowadays. It really, really is. And as you're all familiar with the great job that he does, it's no wonder that he's getting out. Okay, we got some time together. 1-866-889-8894. Anybody wants to call in with any comments about what's going on around the country right now? Dick Cheney, I don't have any of the articles in front of me right now, but Dick Cheney, our good vice, our lovely little cuddly, huggable vice president, Tricky Dickie Cheney, is going around the country now telling people that, look, you're like John Kerry, president. You're somebody going to sneak into the country with a nuclear weapon and set it off in a city. Of course, that's not going to happen if you keep George Bush. And then they're turning around because John Kerry's talking about, well, things that the Republicans actually say they're going to do, like privatizing Social Security. And they go, oh, the scare tactics. I don't know what the... Here's the question. Here's the question for the next 30 minutes until the top of the hour. Okay, folks? The question is this. Do fear tactics work on you? I don't care if they work on other people or not. Do they work on you? And if they do, if they affect your thinking, if they affect your actions or whatever, how? What are the, you know, fear tactics don't work on me. And it's not because I don't get scared. I do get scared. You know, I'm like any other Tom, Dick, and Harry. I have my fears. I have my phobias. But I have bought into hook, line, and sinker. I have bought into the simple line that courage, ladies and gentlemen, courage is not the absence of fear. We would define that as stupidity, foolhardiness, or maybe lacking in some life-preserving hormones. I don't know. Courage is the conquest of your fears. In other words, if something scares you, but you need to get beyond whatever it is that's scaring you in order to accomplish a good goal, you need to courage to get over the fear. Not to eliminate the fear. The fear's there is a healthy response. But, you know, look, that's just one man's opinion. So let's see, if we head to the phone here at 1-866-889-8894, line one, we have Bob from Illinois. How you doing, Bob?
Oh, Oh, very good, Tom.
Great. Well, it's Rama, but I'll forgive you.
Oh.
That's all right. You can
I got
still.
T-H-O-M, like Tom?
Well, no, no. You see, if the head honcho were here, that would be Tom.
Okay.
I'm the second stringer. Tom's.
I was listening to a discussion before, about an argument about President Bush making the country safer, and he can make a claim to that if he's really not drunk driving anymore.
Well. I like that.
About it.
No.
That's about it. But,
Very true. Hey, Bob, let me ask you then while I got you on the phone here. Do fear tactics work with you?
No.
No? Good. Good. How do you...
Common sense does.
Yeah. Well. How do you deal with it when somebody like Dick Cheney runs around and starts talking about nuclear bombs in our major cities if we elect Kerry? I mean, what's your reaction? How do you react to that?
Well, I don't want to call it silly. It sounds desperate to me. You know.
Yeah.
Sounds like flip flopping on the other side when you're letting. You know, when you're letting Iran, develop their nuclear weapons, and North Korea, and kind of consider that a problem we'll deal with later.
Okay. All right. Well, hey, thanks a lot for the call, Bob.
Could I say just one thing about
Yep. Go ahead.
There's mobilizing the vote. I just want to say it is working. I live in Illinois, but I'm on the border with Iowa.
Yeah.
And I did canvassing last week and signed up 20 voters. And,
cool.
Actually, right now, I'm making a little 60-mile drive to pick up my mother that hasn't voted in 10 years that's going to vote today. And
all right, Mom.
And the neighbors want to come with me. So there's three votes that Mr. Bush can't count on, but Kerry can.
So y'all going to go vote for Maryland's nominee for Illinois federal senator, right? No?
Yeah. As soon as that man's done, he needs to find a nice mental hospital.
Hey, he got a job for now. Okay. Thanks a lot, yeah. Bob. You have a great day. Appreciate the call. That's good news. You know, that's something that I'm really glad to hear. It's get people out to vote. And that's another thing. What are you going to do to help get people out to vote? Some of us, like me, sitting here in the People's Republic of Vermont, I hold out my sign. I've been out working on the veterans. In the state, you know, so what else is going on? Okay, let's head on to Tony from Grand Rapids, Michigan. How you doing, Tony?
Hey, Rob.
Hey.
And I think fear tactics work. I'm afraid of Dick Cheney.
Okay. He is kind of scary looking, short,
yeah,
fat guy.
And he's growing horns.
Well, go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah. I was just saying that I think telling everyone that if they vote for the other guy, they're going to die.
Yeah.
It's pretty dumb, but,
well,
I mean, and taking away our freedoms just to protect us, I think Nathan Hale said it best when he said, give me liberty or give me death.
Yeah, and who was that? What, wasn't that Jefferson, the bit about watering the tree of liberty with a little blood of patriots from time to time? Hopefully it doesn't have to be literal blood. I'd like to turn it into more of an analogy, you know, because, Tony, we can walk into a voting booth and we can, even still today, we can make major changes in our government overnight by pulling nothing more violent than than the trigger of a voting machine. And maybe the blood that we need to shed is that extra blood, sweat, and tears to get our butts out and vote and get other people out to vote.
Every vote counts. Make sure they count yours.
Great. Hey, you have a great time up in Michigan, okay, Tony?
Oh, I will.
All right. Thanks a lot for calling.
Bye-bye.
And 1-866-889-8894. And Adam from Santa Fe. How you doing, Adam?
I am well, Rama. How are you?
I'm doing pretty darn good. You know, it's a beautiful day here in Vermont. I love filling in for Tom. You know, give me a microphone and let me believe that gazillions of people are listening to me. I'm happy. So, what did you?
I'd rather be doing your job today than mine, buddy.
All right. Well, stop.
First, I gotta say, excellent question. I think it's a really good question that each person listening to the program can really ask themselves and really get in touch with their own beliefs and why they believe in them, because I know that's what your question's done for me this morning.
Great.
The only fear tactic that work on me is when somebody who actually scares me comes out and reassures me of my fear of them, like Bush saying that he has this
direct line with God. That scared me more than I think anything else I've ever heard. I remember, and my second thing, and the rest of the fear tactics don't scare me, because I'm a firm believer in the power of knowledge, and if people educate themselves and they really come with an objective point of view toward any situation or any politician or whatever, they'll finally come up with the best answer for themselves.
Yep.
And my best answer for that question is Bush scares me because he thinks he's talking to God.
Yeah.
Anyway, my other thing is the saddest part, and the thing that really scares me also, is not the things that these people are telling me. It's the things that I see going on as a result of their actions or their lack of actions in our government.
Yeah.
To name one specific thing, I remember when I was a kid, I just turned 27 years old this month. I remember when I was a kid, and my father used to tell me, we're going to go to Mexico, we're going to go to Canada, we're going to go overseas or whatever. And we would never be afraid of anywhere we were going because we knew that we were United States citizens.
Yeah.
And that if anybody messed with a U.S. citizen, the government and the people of this country would be up in arms and say, Whoa, I don't think so. And they would do everything in their power to reassure the family members back here in the States that we'd be taken care of.
Yeah.
And I don't see that anymore. And I don't feel safe traveling overseas anymore. And the reason why is directly because of this administration and this government.
Yep. Yep.
Besides the terrorists, I'm afraid that my government's not going to do enough for me.
Yeah.
If that does happen, it's not just the terrorists that scare me anymore. And that's a sad place to be in. And it's a sad, I really do feel like I'm living in one of the saddest times of this country's history by far.
All right. Well, Adam, we got other people that want to get in, so I'm going to say thanks for the call. And keep the chin up, brother. At least you recognize what it is that you're dealing with. That's the first step to overcoming these things that, you know, we have some fear about. And if generally things are, you're not afraid of things, how about that? You know, that is one of the most lethal pens in the world. That is a heavy-duty pen. I could knock out a professional boxer with that pen. All right, Ed from California. How you doing, Ed?
Hey, great. First of all, I think it was the Tree of Liberty has to be bathed in the blood of tyrants, not patriots.
Oh, what the heck. Let's do in the Maybe. Patriots. It's easier.
Maybe. Yeah, okay. Well, either one. But the second one is fear doesn't hurt me because I think Cheney's made an agreement with the Saudis not to send 15 of the 19 over here from their country anymore. Maybe Cheney knows something that he's not telling us.
Yeah, maybe.
My fear is that Bush and Cheney are going to be elected.
Well, look, so what are you going to do about that, Ed?
Oh, I'm... You got to be kidding me. I'm voting, baby.
All right, good deal.
I'm voting. My sons are voting. My wife's voting. Everybody's going to vote.
Where in California are you before I let you go here?
San Juan.
San Juan, okay. Hey, got all of California, except for I'm not a big city person. But all of California, with the exception of being stuck in the middle of the big cities, is really a fantastic state.
Yeah, it's a great place to be.
It's pretty. All right, well, hey,
thank you.
Thanks a lot for the call, Ed. Have a great day. All right, let's head on over to, let's see, who we got here? Another Rick from Grand Rapids, Michigan. How you doing, Rick?
Hi, how are you?
Great.
We WTKG listeners, this is the only non-conservative talk show in Western Michigan with one new exception. It's about time, and I guess the ratings have been skyrocketing, so
cool.
They should tell the program managers to some of these stations something.
Absolutely. You get good programming on. That's what people want to hear. They want to hear sound programming.
My main reason for calling, I live in the epicenter of the Republican Party in Michigan, and right now the Republicans are scared down to their toes. I remember that back in 1992 when Bill Clinton ran, I saw a tremendous amount of activity, for him that people never thought in this area that they'd vote for Clinton. And he actually, he didn't win this area, but it was very close. But I will tell you, I have never seen such activity for the Carrier-Woods ticket. It's been unbelievable.
Great.
And now today, ironically enough, I am driving, I'm a salesman, I'm driving, in one of the most busy thoroughfares in the state.
Yeah.
There was a brand new billboard, brand new, couldn't have been more than 3 days old. It has a picture of five nice looking people, and it says Kent County, which is where Grand Rapids is. Kent County is great. keep it that way. And it says vote Republican. And I'm thinking, these people are scared.
Yeah.
These people are absolutely scared. And I'll tell you, is it Rama?
Rama. Yep, you got it.
I will tell you, Rama, yes, they've been saying that Bush is, that, you know, there's been a trail for Bush. I don't think so. The past 3 days, I have noticed that John Kerry proved himself when he ran against Bill Weld in Massachusetts. He actually was way behind the polls, and he closed the deal the last couple weeks. I think this is what's happening now, and I think the people who want to see Bush out and Kerry in are mobilizing. And all I can say is it's a terrific feeling. And around this area, I know people who have even been diehard Republicans who are going to vote for Kerry, which absolutely boggles my mind.
Great.
All I'm saying is let's keep the momentum going.
You bet. And if we all go out there and we all do a little bit, a big thing will happen in the end.
Absolutely. Well, have a good one. By the way, you guys are doing a great job today, and I really hope that Tom knocks him dead.
Oh, he will, I'm sure. I have no doubt. Tom is a brilliant guy.
Have you any idea, has C-SPAN 2 indicated to you when that is going to be on so that we can watch it?
Do I have to tell you? I'll tell you. I don't really want to say it, but he's on right now from noon to 3 Eastern.
No, but I guess he's on live?
Yeah, right now.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. Hey, Rick, I got to let you go. Thanks a lot for the phone call.
Bye-bye.
All right, bye. And we got Paul from Florida. Hang in there, Paul. We will get to you right after we come back from this break. Rama Schneider sitting in for the ever-so-brilliant Tom Hartman on the Tom Hartman radio program.
Bonjour. My name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is ECOWINE. Au revoir!
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
We the people now face a fundamental choice. Take back our government or do nothing and become the victims of tyranny and empire.
That is the message in a revealing new book by Tom Hartman, We the People, A Call to Take Back America. Fully illustrated by Neil Cohn, We the People takes a hard look at America's past, present, and future. You'll find out that the Patriot Act is not unique. In 1798, President John Adams pushed the Alien and Sedition Act through a Federalist Congress, enabling him to have his unpatriotic critics arrested and imprisoned, putting numerous opposition newspapers out of business. While a bit more subtle, Hartman says, this administration is likewise attempting to suppress any criticism, to eradicate any opposition. Progressive talk show host Janine Garofalo says, read this book for a jolt of illumination. We the People, A Call to Take Back America by Tom Hartman. Available in bookstores everywhere.
A researcher has suggestions for homeowners to keep birds flying instead of dying. I'm Richard Hooks for Earthwatch Radio. Birds routinely fly into glass windows simply because they don't see them. They might see reflections of the sky or something behind the glass that they want to investigate. What they don't see is a physical barrier that can hurt them and even kill them. Daniel Klemm is a biologist with Muhlenberg College in Pennsylvania. He's spent decades studying the problems birds have with glass windows. Klemm estimates that in the United States, at least 100 million birds die each year from hitting glass.
Short of habitat destruction, glass is the greatest source of death for wild birds, among them the rare, endangered, and threatened species of the world.
Klemm has tried to find ways to reduce these fatal encounters. He says it helps to cover windows with nets or awnings during times of heavy bird activity. It also helps to adjust the position of bird feeders near windows. If they're close to the glass, a bird that accidentally flies from a feeder into a window pane won't be moving fast enough to get hurt. And Klemm says birds will recognize the glass barrier if decals or other stickers are attached to the outside of windows.
If you take hawk silhouettes, or it doesn't matter, whatever shape, it could be diamonds, it could be circles, it could be anything, and you uniformly cover the surface of the glass, you have increased the opportunity of those animals to be able to recognize the glass as a barrier and stay away from it. If you're willing to do this, then the more that you can tolerate on your window, the better it will be for protecting the birds.
Klemm says a long-term solution would be an entirely new kind of glass. He envisions something that's transparent from the inside, but appears to have patterns in it when viewed from the outside. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
All right, Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman, Tom Hartman radio program. Tom, right now, as we speak from noon to 3 this afternoon, he's over on C-SPAN 2 giving it to these wacko right-wing blathering, drooling idiots. Anyway, we got a couple callers on the line, and I just want to say to the people on the line right now, we've only got a couple minutes, so I'm going to ask you, please, 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 keep your call short so we can get both of you in. And let's start with Paul from Florida. How you doing, Paul?
I'm doing fine, and I'm watching the debate right now.
How's it going?
And the Republicans, the hit squad that they got on there, because that's what I'd call them.
Right.
They're using the same thing that Bush is trying to do at his supporter-only rallies. They're using innuendos, inferences, half-truths,
and
out of context. That's all they do. And they dance around the specific points of articulating arguments and political opinions by diversionary tactics. These people are, if they're not CIA trained in questioning and resisting questioning, well, you tell me what they are.
Well, you know what I would say? I'd say, Sinus, I suspect most of C-SPAN's listeners are fairly well educated, that listening to Tom compared to those guys is certainly being an eye-opening and ear-opening experience for a lot of C-SPAN viewers today.
It has to be net-net educational. Let me bring up one point.
Okay, real quick, because I want to get to another
point. They're ridiculing the Democrats because they say the Democrats want to give people that don't pay taxes a rebate from the government.
Right.
But what the Republicans fail to leave out is they're the party of the corporate monopolies that have jerked the prices up in their corporate monopoly things for health care, food, everything else, so that they're effectively taxing the people. They're not calling it tax. They're doing it in a more sly fashion with corporate monopolism.
You bet.
And those people, that working people that do get something, they're getting such low pay that they can't make it because it costs $30,000-$35,000 a year now just to live out of the gutter in this country. And these people are just the most vile, reprehensible, dishonest,
okay.
Criminals that ever occupied.
I agree, and thank you very much for the call, man. You have a great day. Get out there and vote. Let me head off to the next caller here. This is Enoch from Pennsylvania. I hope I said that right. How you doing, Enoch?
How are you doing, sir?
I'm doing great.
I have a quick question for you, and I need your help desperately.
Okay.
You're from the state of Vermont, correct?
Yes, I hope so, yep.
Okay. Of course I knew that. But
okay.
The reason I asked that question is, why is it that Vermontans have a Republican governor?
Because Republican in Vermont still means the old style Republicans, where they focus more on being fiscally responsible. They believe in a good amount of individual rights and things like that. It's not like your national level Republicans or your Texas.
Okay, I understand. But let me ask you a question. Well, would you vote for your governor again?
No, I didn't vote for him, and I wouldn't. But it's
you wouldn't. Okay.
No. All right. Hey, thanks a lot for the call, though, Enoch.
Thank you so much. Have a great day.
Okay, Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman. We got a really great guest coming up at the top of the next hour, so stick around. Tom will be back again on a Monday, by the way, ladies and gentlemen.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Ripples of the San Francisco hotel workers' lockout have begun hitting other major cities. Six hotel workers were arrested in Boston Wednesday after joining nearly 85 others at a sit-in in the lobby of Hyatt Regency Hotel in Downtown Crossing. The protesters, mostly hotel service workers, were dispersed to the streets by police. Outside, they chanted, "No justice in San Francisco, no peace in Boston." More than 2,600 hotel workers in San Francisco remain locked out of their jobs after hotel owners refused to meet their demands for a two-year contract and better health care.
Testing the limits of the union's conflict of interest clause, the St. Paul Pioneer Press newspaper in St. Paul, Minnesota, suspended two investigative reporters for attending a MoveOn.org concert. The reporters lost 3 days' pay and benefits after management said the paper's ethics policy bars them from activities that would conflict with their employment, like the Bruce Springsteen Vote for Change concert. The reporters argued they did nothing wrong, first, because MoveOn.org is nonpartisan, and second, because they don't cover politics. The paper, though, is refusing to back down. Minnesota Newspaper Guild Executive Officer Mike Sweeney.
We filed a grievance asking the company to rescind the suspension, return the money, and any other lost benefits. They have refused, so we will be moving, well, I've already moved the matter to arbitration, which is a hearing before a third party through that way to get the money restored.
Comcast is being called upon to adopt public interest provisions in pricing, customer service, workers' rights, community access TV, and open access Internet. The code of conduct is being presented to the nation's largest cable company by a coalition of groups made up of the Communication Workers of America, the Coalition of Labor Union Women, Jobs for Justice, and others. The CWA has long been involved with holding Comcast accountable for labor issues and sponsors a website with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers called ComcastWatch.com.
Union electricians and carpenters are picketing the construction site of a new Kroger supermarket in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The workers, represented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 252, are upset that the contractor is using out-of-town labor to get around a higher prevailing wage for local union members. They say that Bosselman Corporation isn't paying the level of wages set by the U.S. Labor Department for the local market in Ann Arbor. The union is asking members to boycott the store when it opens.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Social Security reform, without minimizing it, is of dire importance to African Americans. A recent study by the AARP reveals that 82.3% of African Americans, more than any other in the age group of 65 or older, rely on Social Security for retirement income. Of this group, 52.8% rely on benefits for 90% of their income. Retired African Americans receive only 23.9% of interest income. That's less than half of what is received by all Americans in the same age group.
You've been listening to WIN, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Here's a new political slogan with some integrity and democratic gravitas to it. Let's run government like a government. This is, of course, the opposite of the tired, old, tried and failed slogan that politicians of both parties have been pushing for years. We'll run government like a business. The Clintonites used this in the 90s with their Reinventing Government campaign, declaring that government agencies should become efficient business operations and treat people as customers. Oh? Efficient like what? The mammoth insurance company bureaucracies, or maybe the military contractors who waste and defraud us of billions of our tax dollars? And do they mean customer treatment like we get from don't-give-a-damn banks and telephone companies? Today, we have a fully corporatized White House run by former CEOs, including Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and company. They're literally running government through such standard corporate practices as operating in secret, twisting tax laws to benefit the elite, opposing public disclosure and right-to-know laws, shutting out dissenters and dissing dissent itself, rigging the regulatory rules for corporate gain, stomping on labor, running roughshod over the environment, disempowering consumers, and using advertising gimmicks to hide their deceits. It's time to get real. Government is not a business, and we are not customers. We're citizens. Far from being passive consumers of governmental policies, we're the sovereign powers who can make or unmake those policies. Corporations, by their very nature, are exclusive private empires that exist to serve the bottom line of the wealthiest investors, including the CEOs. Everyone and everything else be damned. That's no model for a democracy. This is Jim Hightower saying, America's founders knew that corporate power was anathema to the public interest and to the democratic will of the people. So they created a framework to run government like a government. It's time to put those democratic principles into action again.
It's a wild day here at the stock market. Let's talk to some traders. How are you doing?
I'm taking a shelling, but I'm still gelling.
Okay, and how about you?
I'm gelling and selling. Gelling and selling.
My trades are smelling.
Mine too, but who cares?
We're gelling.
Are you gelling yet? Dr. Scholl's massaging gel insoles are made from the softest gel ever created. If you and your feet don't feel outrageously comfortable, you get your money back. Guaranteed. Are you gelling? Dr. Scholl's.
Your dog eats your new sofa. Pet satisfaction rating 3%. Your hairdresser doesn't know burnt auburn from burnt toast. Hair color satisfaction rating 5%. After years of marriage, your husband still leaves the seat up. Spouse satisfaction rating minus 2%. Your car insurance company saves you hundreds of dollars and handles your claim quickly and fairly. Car insurance satisfaction rating 97%. Oh, you must have Geico.
Geico's customer satisfaction stands at 97%. How would you rate your car insurance company? Geico. 1-800-947-AUTO.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and bless it the old American way. I'm Rama Schneider, sitting in for Tom Hartman, who at this very moment is over on C-SPAN 2, just totally making a bunch of white ring wackles froth at the mouth. Their eyes are bulging, and they got spittle coming out of the corners as they try to make sense with Tom. Of course, Tom actually makes sense. These guys make noise, but that's okay. So Tom's over on C-SPAN 2 right now. That's why he's not here today. And even more exciting, too, coming up next Friday, C-SPAN's going to bring all their equipment in here to Tom's, the home studio of the Tom Hartman radio program. And you'll get to see the Tom sitting behind his stainless steel working man's microphone, which is going to be a really great project. But more important right now, we have a guest, a Mr. Stephen Van Ivera, and I hope I'm pronouncing that name right. We'll find out in a moment. Stephen teaches international relations at MIT, where he is a professor of political science, received his BA in government from Harvard, his PhD in political science from the University of California at Berkeley. His research interests include the causes and prevention of war, U.S. foreign policy, U.S. national security policy, social science methods. He's author of Guide to Methods for Students of Political Science, Causes of War, Power and the Roots of Conflict, and articles on the causes of World War One. Wow, interesting. Nationalism and the war problem, as well as American intervention into the third world, among many other things. And on that note, I want to I want to welcome Stephen Van Ivera, but please correct me if I mispronounced your name, sir.
It's Van Ivera. It's close enough.
Van Ivera. Okay.
You made me sound like quite a geek there with that introduction, I got to tell you.
Well, I'm always impressed. You know, I'm one of these guys. I always define myself as self-educated. That's the cheesy way of saying I could never hang around and stick through a whole course without getting bored and leaving, you know. So I'm very impressed by people that have the gumption to stick it out for some of these long-winded diplomas. Because
I'll tell you, these MIT students are all way smarter than I am.
Yeah. Isn't that something, trying to teach people that know more than you?
Actually, they are incredibly impressive. They're really something.
Yeah, it's great. Let me. I have some questions, and I guess first I do want to say that, you know, as we get along in time, if you feel that you have something, Stephen, that you want to bring up, feel free to interrupt the flow of the conversation and mention it. But you've written articles on the causes of World War One. So let me ask you this, because the other day I was filling in for Tom here for a couple hours, and one of the things that came up was the 13 soldiers, the reservists over in Iraq that refused to run the fuel up north.
Yeah.
And I went back and did a little research because, you know, I was kind of thinking about, you know, military mutinies, that sort of thing. So I went back and did a little bit of research of things that I knew of. And one of them that came up that I looked it back into was the winter kind of like you could call it the Christmas Mutiny in 1914 in World War One. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because that actually leads into my next question.
Well, there was an amazing event there in Christmas time in 1914 when the British and German troops both quit fighting and celebrated Christmas together across the front lines. And that truce kind of continued until their officers made them stop and ordered them to start shooting each other again.
Yeah.
But
it was a spontaneous thing, though, right? I mean,
it wasn't planned
or anything.
There's actually larger sections along the front where at different times later in the war, the troops themselves kind of organized a live-and-let-live system where, you know, it was like, okay, look, your artillery will fire at 11 at an empty hole, and at noon we'll shoot at that empty trench, and we won't hurt each other.
Right.
And again, the officers, this went on for a few months, and then the officers put an end to it.
Yeah, and they made sure on ensuing Christmases, too, as I understand it, to make sure that good, healthy artillery barrages were being delivered to make sure that, you know, everybody kept their fighting spirits up through the holidays.
Correct. There's a book on this that's fascinating by Robert Axelrod called Evolution of Cooperation. It has a chapter on this.
Evolution of Cooperation.
Yeah, it's very interesting. It has a whole chapter on this.
Huh, I'm going to write that down and check it out.
Yeah.
Here's where the question that I think it leads up to, which is really the first question I want to ask you. I have this term, and I know I'm not the first one to come up with it. I'm a pretty average person. Waging peace, as opposed to wage war, where you go out and you attack things. Wage peace means going out and doing whatever is necessary in order to avoid armed conflict to resolve a situation where it can be done possibly. So I don't know if that defines it well, but with that concept in mind, is waging peace a possibility in our world, or are we stuck in this, we're going to have to shoot and blow each other up until we annihilate the world?
Oh, I think for sure. I mean, I think, you know, we know a few things about how to make peace and how not to make war, and we ought to apply them. not just in Iraq, but in the whole way we relate to Al Qaeda and to other countries.
What do you mean by we know how to avoid the war? It seems to me like we don't know, and that's part of the problem. We, you know, our gut instinct is when we're attacked to lash back even more violently than we're attacked.
I'll give you a couple of ideas of things that we aren't applying now that we do know. One is conflicts are more intense when people believe different versions of history.
Right.
One way to resolve conflict is to try to agree on the past. For example, you talk about World War One and World War II. One cause of those wars was that everybody in Europe believed a very nationalist version of history. Each country believed, you know, their own special glorifying, self-glorifying view of the past. We
right.
were always the good guys. You were always the bad guys. All our wars were started by you. We always offered the hand of peace. And this self-glorifying, other-blaming view of history really poisoned relations between Germany and France, Germany and Poland, Britain and Germany, and so on.
Yep.
And a fundamental reason why Europe is now at peace is because they've done away with that, and the European societies have all kind of agreed to teach history the same way. We can apply that idea elsewhere. For example, with us and Al-Qaeda, Al-Qaeda's whole narrative about history is basically a tissue of lies. Acknowledge no wrongs in their past. They tell a story basically of sort of one-way, unprovoked aggression by others against themselves.
Now they...
We ought to be arguing with them about this.
Okay, by they, then you mean Al-Qaeda.
Yeah,
okay.
Exactly.
All right.
We also ought to take aboard, we have somewhat of a whitewashed image of ourselves. We
yeah.
don't understand that the West ever did anything wrong to the Islamic world. And we as a people need to take aboard the fact that we don't have a white record either. Our whole relationship with the Islamic world will be a lot better if us and the Islamic world have some agreement about the past. And we don't have that today. And the administration, they don't think about this kind of, you know, use of ideas and use of, you know, public diplomacy as a weapon in the war on terror. Instead, they have a very, you know, military-only view of how to deal with others.
If anybody has questions or comments for our guest, Mr. Van Evra, 1-866-889-8894. We'll be happy to entertain you. Is the reason that the current administration, and I don't want to say that other administrations haven't, but just to talk about the current one at the moment, that they're not looking at, I guess, these more peace-oriented solutions. Is it because they don't know how to, or is it just because it's easier to drop bombs, or is there some other underlying principle, like economic reasons, because, you know, it does makes the economy look fatter for a while if we go to war? I mean, is it because they're stupid, or just because they're not trying?
You want to read their tea leaves. What I think the administration's main foreign policy thinkers think is that the mailed fist solves most problems. They're big believers in the use of the big stick to get others to line up and salute and cooperate.
Right.
And they basically believe that for the last century, we've had this whole series of American presidents who haven't been willing to threaten force and use force enough, going all the way back to McKinley. They would even include, I think, Reagan in this. They think that in the second term, Reagan became too soft. And they feel that we're facing disrespect and you know disregard from Mideast governments because they aren't sufficiently impressed with our strength. This was one reason why Rumsfeld was so interested in going into Iraq with a very small force.
Right.
He wanted to really shock and awe not just the Iraqis, but the whole Mideast. And he wanted to show people in the Mideast, you know, we can take down a government without breaking a sweat, and therefore we can do it to you too.
Yeah.
And furthermore, there's a faith that this is enough, that you don't need to do more than this to shape the world to your wishes. You don't need to engage in the kind of thing I was saying earlier, you know, persuading people that that maybe they're misperceiving things.
So they'll all be
public diplomacy.
They'll all be happy working for us then, is what it means.
If they're sufficiently impressed with our strength, that's what they think. They think the world is sort of a jump on the bandwagon world where, you know, displays of strength win more friends than enemies. And they don't have much regard for needing to earn respect. They speak quite contemptuously to others. And if you go around the world and talk to foreign governments and officials, they often complain of the disrespect with which the Bush team speak to them. And the Bushies kind of... they feel that's okay to sort of put people in their place, you know, to let the world know that, you know, there's one superpower here, we give the orders and you take them. And that's rubbing people around the world the wrong way. I mean, to me, the world actually works the other way around. If you If you threaten people too much, if you treat them with too little respect, you wind up encircling yourself. You wind up making more enemies than friends.
Yeah.
Again, you want to look at history. That's what the Germans did before the First World War. That's what the Soviets did. That's why everyone was against them.
Yeah.
We got to watch out. We're going to do the same thing here.
Well, I think we're already halfway there. It boggles my mind. I just keep going back. My brothers and I were pretty big on war games when I was growing up, and these Avalon Hill, these box games where, you know, you'd buy and you'd move cardboard pieces around on a map, and there was one game in particular I remember. This was from the early 70s, and the basis for the game was that Europe and Asia ganged up on the United States and came to invade the United States. And I remember back in the 70s thinking, gosh, how improbable that is. And nowadays I look around and I say, you know, the European Union doing their thing and China over there doing their thing, this becomes less and less a remote possibility unless we start proactively trying to live with these people. Am I missing something there?
No, you're dead right. And this goes back to, you know, kind of what theories do you believe in? People in my business argue over these two opposite theories of how to make countries align on your side. Is it better to threaten them,
right,
and on the hope that you can cow them into joining you, or is it better to reassure them? You know, do you catch more flies with honey or vinegar? If you threaten others, are they more likely to join a coalition against you or jump on your side? And to me, It just to run through it, I mean, we got 400 years of history here that tells us that you encircle yourself if you're too intimidating to others. You've got to reassure the world that you're a good guy, as well as showing them that you're strong and tough.
Yeah, I mean, after all, even the Roman Empire ended up breaking up and going to pieces over time. And
fact, it's kind of interesting because there are counterexamples where people bullied their way into dominance, and I would say Rome is a case of that. And I would say there's a couple of others in history. But these were in periods when there was no communications in the world.
Right.
So that you could kind of bully little weak groups one by one, and they couldn't cooperate against you because they couldn't communicate.
Yes.
Today we live in a world where everyone can communicate, so it's a different world. And to me, we're just asking for trouble if we think we can intimidate our way into, being the dominant world power.
We're coming up on a hard break. Can you stick through and talk to me for about another 5 minutes?
Oh, sure.
That'd be great. Rama Schneider in for Tom Hartman.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Bonjour. My name is Véronique Raskin. I founded the Organic Wine Company 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious. When turned into wine, you can really taste the difference with every sip. So our wines are delicious and eco-friendly. So I want to make it easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you 3 of my favorite organically grown French wines at half off the regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. Isn't that magnifique? I think so. If you don't share my enthusiasm, I'll gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me at 1-888-ECO-WINE. ECOWINE. Au revoir.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. The Bush administration can't seem to get it right when it comes to creating jobs. In the U.S., there's a net loss of jobs. In Iraq, the Bush administration blames a clerical error for overstating the number of Iraqi jobs in projects funded by the U.S. Agency for International Development. The agency first said more than 88,000 were working in its projects as of September 15th, but that has changed to just under 46,000 blamed on a clerical error.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
All right, welcome back to the Tom Hartman radio program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. Joining us on the phone, kind enough to take some time out of his busy day, is Mr. Stephen Van Evra. And he teaches international relations at MIT, does a whole bunch of other things, writes books among things, and doesn't want to come across as too dorky, so we won't go through the whole long list of stuff. But we're talking about the, I guess the conversation seems to be centering around this concept of peace as opposed to war. And Steve, a couple things. One, we got a caller. I want to get to the caller. But before we do, I want to ask you real quick, do you have any examples where a couple of, or one nation went to waging peace, so to speak, as opposed to going to military action to solve an international conflict?
Well, there's several of them. The Germans in the 1870s and 80s under Bismarck, they put the highest priority on war prevention. After they consolidated and unified their country, Bismarck said, hey, our number one problem now is to not be caught up in wars on our periphery, because we're in the right middle of this cockpit here. And he had a positive policy preventing war in the other parts of Europe, and it was successful. He was very smart about it. His basic approach was to try to see to it that everybody around him was secure.
Right.
And he was very smart. Another one is the British, who had a positive policy of getting along with the United States from the 1890s onward.
Yeah.
Everyone says appeasement is a terrible thing to do, but their policy was to appease the United States. And this policy really paid off because it helped bring the U.S. to their side in World War One.
Yeah, it worked like a charm in the end. Okay, well, Steve, you mind if we head to the phones here?
Sure.
Okay, great. Ed from New Mexico. How you doing, Ed?
Hi, how are you? You know, I was struck with that image of the German and English soldiers, I guess, having that kind of Christmas armistice among themselves. Versus the idea, another image came to mind of Paul Wolfowitz going to Baghdad, one of the architects of the policy, who never was in a war himself, and sort of beating it out of town when a shell hit his hotel where he was staying. I don't know if he left exactly because of that, but that was the image I got. And I'm a veteran for peace, and I also have a BA from Berkeley. I wasn't a great political scientist student, but I went on in other fields. And if I recall, the great lesson that I learned from studying political science at Berkeley was that you don't go to war except as an absolute last resort. Can you talk about that versus the idea of preemptive strikes?
Yeah, that's a great question. I agree with you know, the lesson you offer there, which is war ought to be a last resort. And the reason why is because the use of force is always such an uncertain way to solve the problem. One book I love is this book, The Peloponnesian War by Thucydides, which is an ancient book.
Well, that's right.
It's really dull, but it's not. And the whole message of that book is when you use force to solve problems, you're lighting a fire and you don't know where that fire will burn. You cannot predict the results. It's an inherently dangerous thing to do. Force is a very unwieldy instrument and often burns the people who use it. And so Thucydides was willing to use force, but the whole book is a warning. Things may not turn out the way you want. You cannot control what occurs.
Now, wasn't he writing during the active period of the Spartan-Athens wars?
Exactly. He was writing during the middle of these three wars between Sparta and Athens, which ended in ruin for his own country, Athens.
Yeah, definitely.
The whole theme of the book was, we Athenians have been reckless. We've been too reckless about using force. We've been too quick to assume that we can control events when we unleash force.
Well, Ed, thanks a lot for the call, unless you have something else you want to add real quick.
Well, thank you very much.
All right, great. Have a great day.
I'll add something for Ed there, which is, this idea of preventive war, what's interesting and fun to do is to go back and ask how often preventive wars turned out badly.
Okay.
The answer is often. Bismarck, again, I was quoting him earlier. He was the great German chancellor in the late 1800s, who was really a brilliant statesman. He said, preventive war is like committing suicide from fear of death. Okay? He was being pushed in his own time.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, he was being pushed to launch preventive war against Russia, and he was saying, that's nuts. Like committing suicide for fear of death.
Boy. Hey, Steve, thank you so much for taking some time and spending it with us. It's been enlightening. And you have a great day, and hopefully we'll talk to you again sometime.
You too. Good luck.
Absolutely. Bye-bye.
Bye.
All right. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. We'll be back. So will you.
A must-read, The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. Ed Hallowell, a nationally recognized expert on ADD, said this about The Edison Gene.
Tom Hartman demonstrates that ADHD can be associated with creativity, high achievement, and a most successful adaptive style.
The Edison Gene, now available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Ripples of the San Francisco hotel workers' lockout have begun hitting other major cities. Six hotel workers were arrested in Boston Wednesday after joining nearly 85 others at a sit-in in the lobby of Hyatt Regency Hotel in Downtown Crossing. The protesters, mostly hotel service workers, were dispersed to the streets by police. Outside, they chanted, "No justice in San Francisco, no peace in Boston." More than 2,600 hotel workers in San Francisco remain locked out of their jobs after hotel owners refused to meet their demands for a two-year contract and better health care.
Testing the limits of the union's conflict of interest clause, the St. Paul Pioneer Press newspaper in St. Paul, Minnesota, suspended two investigative reporters for attending a MoveOn.org concert. The reporters lost 3 days' pay and benefits after management said the paper's ethics policy bars them from activities that would conflict with their employment, like the Bruce Springsteen Vote for Change concert. The reporters argue they did nothing wrong, first, because MoveOn.org is nonpartisan, and second, because they don't cover politics. The paper, though, is refusing to back down. Minnesota Newspaper Guild Executive Officer Mike Sweeney.
We filed a grievance asking the company to rescind the suspension, return the money, and any other lost benefits. They have refused, so we will be moving, well, I've already moved the matter to arbitration, which is a hearing before a third party through that way to get the money restored.
Comcast is being called upon to adopt public interest provisions in pricing, customer service, workers' rights, community access TV, and open access internet. The code of conduct is being presented to the nation's largest cable company by a coalition of groups made up of the Communication Workers of America, the Coalition of Labor Union Women, Jobs for Justice, and others. The CWA has long been involved with holding Comcast accountable for labor issues and sponsors a website with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers called ComcastWatch.com.
Union electricians and carpenters are picketing the construction site of a new Kroger supermarket in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The workers, represented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 252, are upset that the contractor is using
using out-of-town labor to get around a higher prevailing wage for local union members. They say that Bosselman Corporation isn't paying the level of wages set by the U.S. Labor Department for the local market in Ann Arbor. The union is asking members to boycott the store when it opens.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Social Security reform, without minimizing it, is of dire importance to African Americans. A recent study by the AARP reveals that 82.3% of African Americans, more than any other in the age group of 65 or older, rely on Social Security for retirement income. Of this group, 52.8% rely on benefits for 90% of their income. Retired African Americans receive only 23.9% of interest income. That's less than half of what is received by all Americans in the same age group.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The microphone's on. Hey, welcome back. Tom Hartman radio program. Rama Schneider sitting in for the Tom Meister, who, as we speak right now, I know is just driving a bunch of these cons right up the wall with his with Tom's steady stream of common sense, intelligence, lucidness, and all the other positive attributes. You know the cons, of course. It's all a bunch of negative attributes. Absolutely. Untold negative attributes. They just drool and spit and foam and froth at the mouth. And I grew up in a house. By the way, that's over in C-SPAN, too. Anybody that wants to watch Tom make a bunch of people froth at the mouth, it's kind of funny. I stopped, took a quick look at it a little while ago. I grew up in a household where you needed three things in an argument in my family. And I grew up with this, so I knew. One, you had to be loud. So I don't blame these guys for trying to be loud. You had to be loud in my household. I grew up in a loud household. It was only five kids, but even today when we get together, we are loud. Our volume is way up there. You know, we red spike any volume. So you had to be loud, but that was only one part of it, and that's the part the cons understand. They understand loud. Another thing you had to do, you actually had to have your facts correct in my family in order to win an argument. Okay? But it wasn't just enough to be loud and have your facts correct. You also had to be able to present your ideas, loudly, of course, but in such a manner that people could understand them. That was the only way in my household that I grew up with my brothers and my sister and my mother helped out, and I'm sure my father did too to some degree. That's how I learned to argue. You know, this is why I love getting into shouting matches with cons. I really do. It's because cons understand how to be loud, but they don't know how to be loud, be factual, and present their ideas all at the same time. They can't do it. They just can't do it. And that's what Tom's got going with them right now. A couple of questions for the day as we go on. You know, look, people engaging in fear tactics, getting down to the tail end of the, finally, of the presidential campaign. How do you react to fear, ladies and gentlemen? That's one of the questions. Got a bunch of other stuff now. Actually, for the remaining hour and a half of the show, it's my favorite guest in the whole world. It's the listeners. So with that said, 1-866-889-8894. Lynn from Eureka, California. Hello, Lynn. How you doing?
Pretty good.
Listen,
I switched over to C-SPAN 2 for a little while and watched.
Yeah.
For just a little while. But while I was watching, the cons were running by their thing about how they're the moral party and people are voting for them for moral reasons.
Oh, yeah.
And I just wanted to know, is it moral to lie, to destroy the environment, to take from the poor, to give to the rich, to remove civil rights, to bully and destroy those who disagree with you, to start a war for no real reason?
Well,
I mean, I think it's time we call them on this.
Well,
no one does.
Here's the thing. This is maybe what we're missing on our side, Lynn. They will use a word and then decide, and by they I mean the cons in this case, the political conservatives, they will use a word, and then after they use the word, they will define it for you, okay? In other words, they will call themselves moral because moral sounds good. Everybody likes moral. You like moral? I like moral. Who couldn't like a moral candidate? Who couldn't like a, who couldn't want to go out and vote for a candidate that's going to look out for the morals of our country? But what they don't tell us is what they mean by moral. And herein is where I think what you're saying has a lot of resonance, Lynn, in that you defined morality the way they're presenting it, but they're going to say totally different. They're going to say, oh, no, moral is respect for life. I mean, we only respect life. When we bomb those Iraqi women and children in order to have our way with their oil fields, that's respecting life.
Isn't it time we take away some of their definitions from them? We just sit there and listen to it. We never call them on it.
Yep, you bet. Well, Tom talks about that a lot here. He refers to it as framing. You know, how do you frame it?
Yeah. And, well, we need to. I mean, in the debates, they were never called on it. Never called on it. In news shows, they always say that the moral party. In fact, the newscasts always present them as the moral party. It's morality versus whatever we are.
Yeah. Well, we're the right side. We're the side of the right, the correct. We're on the side. Let me tell you, James Carville, and he's a pretty well-known public figure. I kind of like the guy. I kind of dislike the guy for a variety of reasons. Yeah. But one of the things I really like about him. I remember several years ago, actually, I think he came out with a book in 2001. It's called We're Right, They're Wrong. And, of course, Carville, by saying we're right, he means the Democrats.
Right.
He makes no bones about it. He goes out, he sits down, he says, we're right and they're lying, and he doesn't mince words. And then he comes out and shows you why. And you're right. You know, and Tom's right. It's all how we frame it. When they say, gee, we're being the moral party, when the Republicans say that, people should be saying exactly what you're saying, Lynn. I agree 100%.
Okay.
Anything
else? I think we need to call them on it. The other thing I'd like to do before you let me go is
let you go, huh?
Get the name of that book that your guest mentioned.
Hold on. Let me.
I was going to type it in my computer, but I forgot.
Okay, here it is. Yeah, well, I wrote it down because, it's the sort of thing I'm interested in, too.
Yeah.
This whole concept of waging peace I find extremely interesting. It's Evolution of Cooperation, and I did not get the author's name.
Well, we can find it. Thanks.
I think so. Hey, great. Thanks a lot for calling, Lynn.
Yeah, bye.
Have a great day. Yeah, the usage of the language. I mean, how do you convey ideas? How do you convey ideas? You convey ideas visually by audioly, but I don't think that's the word. You do it by sight. You do it by sound. Under certain circumstances, you do it by smell or taste or tactile, where you touch things, right? Now, generally, in conveying information of the political sort, you usually are relying on a combination of two or maybe one or the other. You're usually relying on sound or visual. You know, you see that's the TV and the radio. The radio, for instance. Now, I know sometimes I can be bad on the radio, but I can't smell bad. I know sometimes I can be really good on the radio, but you can't smell me through the radio, I don't think. I'll have to check in with the chat room, see what they got to say with that one. By the way, you want to go to the chat room. A bunch of really great, great folks gather together during the show. Go to tomhartman.com and click on chat room, or chat rather, and hey, takes you to the chat room. It's a great conversation, and the people get together and have all sorts of, weird things go on in there, and it's not always political, and sometimes doesn't even have much to do with the show, but it's a great place. But this is why I was getting to growing up in my family and learning how to win an argument. In order to present your ideas, that this whole concept of framing an idea, and I don't want to go on with this too long because this is something Tom talks about at great length, and he's much better at talking about it than I am. But no matter what they, and by they, I'm going to use they as in meaning the opponent for whatever that means, or the people who are presenting an idea other than yours. They may not even be your opponent. It's just they. No matter what they say and what they use for a definition, you use your own definitions, even if you're using the same words. And it can be tough. But here's the thing. If your definition, if your usage of a word makes sense, people will pick up your definition. One of my favorite things lately has been on some of these talk shows, especially the local ones. I like to call in once in a while. And people talk about, oh, how horrible it is that, you know, Kerry said those nasty things about the POWs in Vietnam or the people in Vietnam, which, of course, Kerry never said. They're talking about where he referred to cutting off ears and murdering, raping, etc. What Kerry was actually, and Tom's played that on here, too. And actually, if you go to GRR Radio, GRRradio.com, you can listen to the clip of what Kerry testifying before the Senate in 1971. I've got it there also, along with a transcript. But what Kerry was saying, that, you know, like more than 150 honorably discharged Vietnam veterans publicly testified, they publicly identified themselves, they publicly identified the instances and locations, dates and times when they were talking about. And this is called the Winter Soldier investigation. And in this Winter Soldier investigation, they publicly laid everything out on the table. And all John Kerry did was present to the Senate what the Winter Soldier investigation had come up with. Now, my favorite thing is to sit there and say, you've got to stop spreading this lie. I never refer to anything about that the Swifties come out with about that comments or that the Republicans like to say about Kerry's testimony in front of the Senate. I tell people that they are being lied to. I don't mince words. 90% of the people who are already convinced that Kerry's on the wrong end of that walk away. I don't care. I don't care. I'm not trying to convince somebody who's not convincible. I'm not going to spend my days and hours and you know, just going on and on and on. Frame the conversation in a way that makes sense to you. You're smart people. This is the truth. Grace and I, the wife and I, we do this little homemade internet show. It's called GRR Radio. And we broadcast on Sunday evenings. And we have fun with it. It's a hobby thing for us. We both enjoy it. And, I forgot what I was going to get to here. But, you know, it's just that idea. Look, let them frame it. No, don't let them frame the arguments for you. Frame them for yourself. You know, have fun. You're into, oh, I know what I was going to get to. We call it mom and pop radio. That's my short attention span, by the way, folks. We call our GRR Radio thing mom and pop radio. It's because, based on the general theory, you don't have to be some highfalutin snob stuck down in Washington, D.C. with gonzos of contacts in the White House and in the legislature in order to make sense of the world. Yeah, all of you. That's right. Everyone looking at the radio right now. You are smart enough to work your way through this crap yourself. You really are. So let's head over to the phones here. 1-866-889-8894. Mark from... Mark, where are you from?
La Quinta, California.
La Quinta, okay. The way...
Near Palm Springs.
All right. I'm just trying to figure out how the heck Ira wrote that down. But that's okay. All right. What's going on, Mark? What can we do for you?
I was just calling to, you know, sort of put out there. It seems to me that the Republican Party is mostly kind of based on the evangelical Christian kind of extreme part,
right,
of the population. And those people, you know, they tend to like to be told everything, you know?
Right.
I mean, that's one of the reasons I think they're so...
They're evangelicals.
So evangelical, yeah.
Yeah.
And so, you know, it seems to me that it makes total sense for them to just sort of go out and dictate, you know, to them. And they just listen and absorb it and say, okay, you know, and they don't really ask the questions. And they're not interested in asking the questions, you know, which is why they're so evangelical. So, like you were just saying, I don't think it's really worth our time to even worry about it because there's nothing you can do. I mean, you know, you can't really talk sense to people who are more interested in having somebody tell them, you know, the facts.
You know, I'm an unsuccessful enough salesperson in my life, and I know because I've tried it several times, almost starved to death a couple of the times. And the thing that I never knew, or it took me a long time to learn, actually, I did figure it out after a while, was when somebody meant it when they said they weren't interested, that it was time to say, hey, it was nice talking to you, and head out the door, find somebody who's at least interested in hearing what you got to say, you know?
Right. Why waste your breath?
Absolutely. And why waste their time? All you're going to do is piss them off, and then they're going to close off even more.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, hey, Mark, thanks a lot
for
the call.
Thanks.
Appreciate it. Have a great day. So, you know, anyway, we are smart. You know what? That's one of the grand things. We are smart. We are not powerless, people. I don't give a good googly schmoogly whatever anybody says. A very wise woman, once said, and I heard her say this on the air, you only are powerless when you give up power. When you sit down and say, I can't do anything about it. Well, then you're powerless. But as long as you sit there and say, gosh, there's something I can do. Even if it's a small little itty bitty. I am a firm believer in doing small little itty bitty things. I think small little itty bitty things end up adding up to a big kabuchi. It really, really does. More than two dozen top fundraisers for President Bush and Democratic challenger John Kerry are current or former senior managers of companies punished for trading with Iran or Saddam Hussein's Iraq. That's including the chairman of Bush's Homeland Security Advisory Committee and Kerry's fundraising chairman. Why? Excuse me, folks. If you're Kerry supporters, I'm about to present an argument that I know you're going to have people, Nader supporters, are going to go, oh, yeah, that's a reason to vote for Nader. But here's the ugly truth about some of this stuff. Both candidates say they want the United States to hunt down and kill or capture terrorists. They say those who harbor and finance terrorists are just as guilty. Bush famously described, of course, Iran, Iraq, and North Korea as the axis of evil. But the tough talk doesn't address the role of American companies that do business, intentionally or not, with countries such as Iran on the U.S. list of state sponsors of terrorism. 19 people who have raised more than $100,000 for Bush have done transactions with Iran or Iraq. 9 top Kerry fundraisers. Rama Schneider, sitting in for Tom Hartman. Be back in a flash!
Are George Bush's policies getting you down? Have you had enough of Bush's messianic militarism? Does John Ashcroft's assault on the Bill of Rights scare you? Do you believe that Dick Cheney had his conscience surgically removed 3 decades ago? Are you angry at the Iraq fiasco that was the brainchild of Deputy Secretary of Defense Paul out of his Wolfowitz? Well, then subscribe to the Progressive Magazine. You'll get the insights of Barbara Ehrenreich, the inspiration of Howard Zinn, and the mirth of Molly Ivins, Will Durst, and Kate Clinton. They'll help you survive this dark age. And check this out. You can subscribe today for only $12 for 12 monthly issues. Simply get on the web and go to www.progressive.org or call 1-800-827-0555 and mention offer radio. That's 1-800-827-0555 and mention the radio offer from the Tom Hartman program. That's the Progressive. It's your antidote to reactionary policies.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. Do you have a dust mask? Well, if you use a bagless vacuum and you're sensitive to dust, a leading consumer magazine products testing magazine warns you should wear a dust mask. But here's a better idea. Try my newest hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL risk-free for 30 days. It uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. Try emptying a bagless vacuum and see what happens. Dust gets all over your hands and face and back into the room and on the kitchen counter. And you get to breathe it in? I believe a vacuum should capture the dust, not your lungs. That's why with my Auric XL, the filter bags are self-sealing. What goes in the bag stays in the bag, even when you empty it. So try my hypoallergenic 8-pound Auric XL free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. Then if you still want a bagless vacuum, I'll send you a dust mask to wear.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left. In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way, to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Canada gets tough on a foreign beetle that eats up trees and property values. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. Last November, the Asian long-horned beetle was discovered in Ontario eating away at trees around Toronto. The sighting set off alarms across Canada and the United States because the insect could devastate hardwood forests. Trees typically die within a few years after beetle larvae tunnel under their bark and start chewing away. Howard Stanley is a project officer with the Canadian Food Inspection Agency, and it's his job to make sure the beetle doesn't spread. He says it's hard work. The beetles spread easily because they have an appetite for all kinds of trees, including maples, poplars, and birches. Stopping the beetle requires removing and destroying infested trees, and it requires removing other trees within 400 meters that might be a target for the insects. That creates another problem. Stanley says some people are reluctant to report infestations because they worry about losing all the trees on their property.
We do empathize with the impact on property owners. But we have to worry about the greater impact on the entire nation as far as the environment and especially as far as the economy. This insect, if allowed to go rampant, would have a huge impact upon the economy. We're looking at a hardwood forest products industry in Canada that generates $11 billion Canadian annually.
Canada now gives property owners up to $300 in compensation for every tree lost. Stanley hopes this will encourage people to report sightings of the destructive beetle.
The key to success is that detection. If we detect it early enough, this is one insect we can actually eradicate as long as we know where it is.
Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman, the radio program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom about 5 minutes before the top of the hour. Maybe we should give classes on how to out-shout the opposition. But then again, it just turns into a shouting match. But you know, sometimes a shouting match is good. It clears out the lungs, right? You know, so maybe if we kind of take the analogy and think about the shouting match. A shouting match helps relieve some of that physical congestion, some of that physical lung congestion. You know, when we used to, in boot camp, or any time in the Army, I spent about somewhere between seven and a half, 8 years, I forget exactly how much, spent our time in, we'd go out running, we'd sing cadence, and the idea behind singing cadence was it helped to build up that lung power, and it worked! So maybe letting loose from the bottom, from the solar plexus, when you're getting in a good argument with somebody, you know, let it loose once in a while, as long as you, stay away from the fisticuffs. That doesn't help an argument anymore. Trish Bocock of Jacksonville, Oregon, population 2,226, writes for Rents.com about how Jacksonville is an old gold mining town. Main Street only 5 blocks long, lined with restored storefronts, narrow sidewalks, peaceful community. And they got kind of excited over the prospect recently of a visit by the Honorable President George W. Bush. And then she goes on to write, you know, little old Jacksonville, Oregon, population 2,226, with the presidential visit, ends up with police armed with high-powered rifles on the rooftops, helicopters flying low overhead, cadre of motorcycle police zooming in town, black U.S. SUVs, black SUVs. Followed and sandwiching several black limousines carrying Bush and the entourage. Main Street lined with people gathered to witness the event. Many supported the president, many did not. Can you guess what happened to the ones who did not? The riot, the local SWAT team leapt to action and moved all of those who were anti-Bush out of earshot of Bush and left all the adoring crowds behind them. You gotta outshout something like that. You gotta figure out how to get around it. Rob Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. Hang around, folks. We're going to be right back around after the top of the hour. You betcha.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's
888-242. Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Ripples of the San Francisco hotel workers' lockout have begun hitting other major cities. 6 hotel workers were arrested in Boston Wednesday after joining nearly 85 others at a sit-in in the lobby of Hyatt Regency Hotel in Downtown Crossing. The protesters, mostly hotel service workers, were dispersed to the streets by police. Outside, they chanted, "No justice in San Francisco, no peace in Boston." More than 2,600 hotel workers in San Francisco remain locked out of their jobs after hotel owners refused to meet their demands for a 2-year contract and better health care.
Testing the limits of the union's conflict of interest clause, the St. Paul Pioneer Press newspaper in St. Paul, Minnesota, suspended 2 investigative reporters for attending a MoveOn.org concert. The reporters lost 3 days' pay and benefits after management said the paper's ethics policy bars them from activities that would conflict with their employment, like the Bruce Springsteen Vote for Change concert. The reporters argued they did nothing wrong, first, because MoveOn.org is nonpartisan, and second, because they don't cover politics. The paper, though, is refusing to back down. Minnesota Newspaper Guild Executive Officer Mike Sweeney.
We filed a grievance asking the company to rescind the suspension, return the money, and any other lost benefits. They have refused, so we will be moving, well, I've already moved the matter to arbitration, which is a hearing before a third party through that way to get the money restored.
Comcast is being called upon to adopt public interest provisions in pricing, customer service, workers' rights, community access TV, and open access Internet. The code of conduct is being presented to the the nation's largest cable company by a coalition of groups made up of the Communication Workers of America, the Coalition of Labor Union Women, Jobs for Justice, and others. The CWA has long been involved with holding Comcast accountable for labor issues and sponsors a website with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers called ComcastWatch.com.
Union electricians and carpenters are picketing the construction site of a new Kroger supermarket in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The workers, represented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 252, are upset that the contractor is using out-of-town labor to get around a higher prevailing wage for local union members. They say that Bosselman Corporation isn't paying the level of wages set by the U.S. Labor Department for the local market in Ann Arbor. The union is asking members to boycott the store when it opens.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Social Security reform, without minimizing it, is of dire importance to African Americans. A recent study by the AARP reveals that 82.3% of African Americans, more than any other in the age group of 65 or older, rely on Social Security for retirement income. Of this group, 52.8% rely on benefits for 90% of their income. Retired African Americans receive only 23.9% of interest income. That's less than half of what is received by all Americans in the same age group.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers Independent News. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
So, Jasper, how was your year?
Excellent. This administration gives the best returns ever.
Do tell.
Well, the money I paid to a lobbying firm in Washington brought in over $50 million in overseas contracts.
Oh, yes, lobbying pays.
Are you still into commodities, Max?
No, I'm funding politicians. My campaign contributions got me over $100 million worth of regulation waivers.
Well done, Max.
Today's wisest investments are in politics. Where are you throwing your money?
Easily paid for by billionairesforbush.com.
Maybe you're one of the 2 million Americans who've recently had their jobs offshore into India, Pakistan, and elsewhere, or one of the millions more expected to have your job shipped abroad in the next few years. If so, don't worry, bucko, for a new growth industry has arisen that offers exciting job opportunities for you discarded Americans. You, too, could become an American accent and culture trainer. It seems that while such corporations as Citibank, Dell, GE, and Microsoft are eager to abandon the U.S. and move their telephone service jobs to low-wage workers abroad, these English-speaking foreign workers are, well, foreign. So their accents and cultural references can be jarring to U.S. customers placing orders or seeking help. Thus, offshoring companies are hiring Americans to teach foreign replacement workers to sound and behave like Americans. Yes, this means you could end up teaching the Indian or Pakistani or Russian who was given your job how to sound like you. Courses in American Culture 101 include U.S. history memorization, American slang, basic sports knowledge, and pop culture. Quick, what's the Lone Star State? Who are the Florida Marlins? Can you name one talent that Britney Spears has? What's a burrito? The lesson plans for these courses include having to watch episodes of Friends and screening such films as Bruce Almighty. As for accents, there are voice exercises for Indians, for example, to help them lower their natural high-pitched and clipped pronunciation of English. And if the exercises are not enough, the corporate call centers use technology to filter the telephone voices of the foreign service reps, making them sound lower than they are. This is Jim Hightower saying, of course, it won't be long before the corporations train low-paid foreigners to teach American accents and culture to foreign workers. Then there'll be no need for American workers at all.
I have these nightmares. This taco, not just an ordinary taco, but this big, evil taco is haunting me. You see, I was exposed to credit cards in college, and I wasn't the most responsible person back then.
Go, go, go!
I mean, I heard the words credit card and thought, hey, hey, free money! Plane ticket to spring break? Credit card. New skis? Credit card. 135 taco dinners? Bam! Credit card. But hey, it's not too late to do something about your credit. Get Score Power from Equifax.com. Score Power gives you your credit report, credit score, and it puts you on the road toward the credit you deserve for just $14.95. So, check out Equifax.com today and get that taco you ate 7 years ago out of your life.
Get Score Power at Equifax.com or 1-877-4-EQUIFAX. That's EQUIFAX. Equifax.
Adios, taco.
Get the power. Score Power at Equifax.com.
Thank you.
calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Coming at you coast to coast, all around the world for that matter, baby. We got you covered one way or another. You bet. Terrestrial radio stations, internet, satellite feeds. My gosh, you just can't avoid us. Ha 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 ha! It's the Tom Hartman Show. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. Tom, actually, he's right now. I hate saying this, but you know, he's the boss. I'm supposed to play second fiddle, so I got to let it be known. If you see C-SPAN 2 right now, Tom's on live spouting common sense, intelligence, and practical ideas with a bunch of right-wingers. So, you know, if you think you need to tune in, you probably can catch a refeed of that some later point during the day or a repeat off the internet, too, you know, so... If you'd rather stick around, have some fun here with the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894. This being the third hour, no guests except for the listeners. So, you know, it's kind of free flow as it goes. We got a bunch of stuff in the rest of the news that probably doesn't get a whole lot of coverage on the massive media because, of course, we got to know about Mary Cheney and the fact that she's the lesbian daughter of Tricky Dicky Cheney, and we have to know did Laura Bush accept Mrs. Kerry's apology. Those are the important things in life. But so what we do here on the Tom Hartman radio program, seeing as already the massive media is covering all the important things, the Kobe Bryant trials, Michael Jackson, that sort of stuff, we focus on the mundane, the unimportant, the boring, the ho-hum, you know, the things that actually make a difference in people's lives. Yeah, as strange as it may seem, there's a place for that in the world. And that place is right here on the Tom Hartman radio program. Oh, also, you know, it's awesome enough that Tom right now is over on C-SPAN. They're absolutely upsetting the wacko right of the country with the amount of insight and research and experience and just overall wisdom that he brings with him. But next Friday, this is going to be really fun. Next Friday, Tom is going to be on C-SPAN. Oh, see, I'm sorry. C-SPAN debate is now over. Okay. Hey, good. All right, cool. C-SPAN debate's over. No more C-SPAN debate. Okay, but Tom was there. But he's wherever they were doing the C-SPAN debate, which, incidentally, I don't know. But anyway, next Friday, C-SPAN is going to be bringing their equipment right here to the home studio of the Tom Hartman radio program, and you'll be able to see Tom sitting behind his stainless steel working man's microphone right from where he normally does the broadcast, and so that's going to be really cool. I'm going to actually tune in. I am setting time to sit down and watch TV next Friday to watch that, to watch Tom do his thing. That's going to be it's awesome. Okay. So, 1-866-889-8894. Haiti. You remember Haiti? Haiti's that little country the U.S. government armed and retrained all the bloodthirsty cast-offs that Clinton chased out of the Haitian government in the early part of the 90s. And just not too long ago, they got rearmed and retrained and situated in the Dominican Republic, just across the border from Haiti. And then they came in and chased Aristide out of power in an obvious coup. Coincidentally enough, and you'll see how coincidental this is in a couple minutes, coincidentally enough, the U.S. government, of course, says, well, Aristide resigned. We wouldn't have put up with a coup. He resigned and left the country of his own free will. I mean, this is a president who, by the way, down, and he was president, freely elected. He may not have been a perfect human being, but he was freely elected by huge majorities. He commands like 70-75% or did approval majorities. Of course, that's because there's all those poor people in Haiti who Aristide would stick up for. Now, I know he comes with warts, okay? I'm not going to stick up for the guy entirely himself. However, we did go and chase him out. And then we said, well, we'll send in some peacekeepers and we'll get things all set up hunky-dory. Everything will be running smooth. Basically, what they meant is they'll return Haiti back to corporate playground to, you know, where we can keep those Haitians living in sub-poverty levels and some rich people can make a whole ton of money, et cetera. You know, it's that modern day conservative cheap labor theology in action. Well, if you looked at the news, not very well mentioned news, but on October 20th, you would have seen this headline titled U.S. lifts arms embargo on Haiti as tensions mount. Now, not just because of the hurricane, okay? Haiti got smacked by a couple hurricanes, caused enough trouble. We all saw the film footage of the flooding and all the damage from the hurricanes. What they didn't show, and what I was hearing from people that had actually gone to Haiti and came back, and I talked to from firsthand knowledge, was that a lot of people were being disappeared. There was murders, physical intimidation, the whole nine yards to keep the Haitian people in line because the guy who they wanted as president, Aristide, had been chased out of there by the United States of America and our criminal buddies. So there have been problems, and the Aristide supporters have finally decided, well, look, we're not going to be disappeared into non-existent. We're going to rise back up. We're going to get violent ourselves. Good or bad, that's, I don't know. I'm not going to make the judgment on that. So we got this little nice fire going on down there in Haiti. And, of course, you know, we want to cool the fire off. We want to reduce tensions. So we go over, we get our nice bucket, and we bring it over, and we throw our bucket of gasoline on the fire. Whoa! That'll work, huh? That's how smart these are. I mean, this is just one. Haiti is just one more example of the utter, total, complete failure of the Bush administration's foreign policy. Okay? Total, complete. But it's not the first time these dummies have tried this thing. And by these dummies, I mean specifically the Bush administration, have tried this thing down in that part of the world. April 12th, 2002. This is an article from CBC News up in Canada. Venezuela's ousted President Hugo Chavez remained in custody at an army base Friday after senior military officials insisted that he resign. The end of Chavez's 3 years in power came after a day of violence that saw 12 anti-government protesters shot and killed. And the article goes on to talk about how the day before, the day before would have been April 11th, 2002, that there was a military coup in Venezuela to get rid of Hugo Chavez. Yes, the same Chavez that's right now president of Venezuela, the same Chavez that got like 56 or 58% of the vote in the attempted recall. They tried a California on his butt. And it didn't work. Pedro Carmona, head of Venezuela's largest business association, no less, announced on that day that he would head a transitional government consisting of military and civilian representatives. After the president's resignation, Carmona appeared on national television along with General Vasquez and senior officers from all four branches of the military. An article goes on. What did our government think of a violent military overthrow of a democratically elected president of a Caribbean basin nation? Well, same thing that they basically thought. They thought then in 2002 what they thought in 2004 about Aristide. And Deputy Spokesman Philip T. Reeker press statement from the U.S. Department of State website, April 12, 2002. Yesterday, hundreds of thousands of Venezuelans gathered peacefully to seek redress of their grievances. The Chavez government attempted to suppress peaceful demonstrations. Chavez supporters on orders fired on unarmed peaceful protesters resulted in more than 100 wounded or killed. And by the way, people who I've talked to from Venezuela say that's bunk. But anyway, Venezuelan military, our State Department goes on, and police refused orders to fire on peaceful demonstrators and refused to support the government's role in such human rights violations. The government prevented five independent television stations from reporting on events. The results of these provocations are Chavez resigned the presidency. Before resigning, he dismissed the vice president and the cabinet. A transition civilian government has promised early elections. And we, the State Department, have every expectation that this situation will be resolved peacefully and democratically by the Venezuelan people in accord with the principles of the Inter-American Democratic Charter. In other words, as you read through their press release, what just comes out is, that's fine. They unasked a democratically elected president of a constitutional government. That's fine. No big. But you know what? They made a mistake when they said we have every expectation that the situation would be resolved peacefully, because it was. It didn't take but 4 days for the people of Venezuela to rise up, hit the streets, and let the Carmona illegal U.S.-backed government know beyond a shadow of a doubt they wanted their freely elected constitutional president, Hugo Chavez, back. And they had to give in. The coup leaders had to give in. And that's where it gets kind of silly. As we find out, of course, this had to come from a British paper. An April 21st, 2002 article titled Venezuela Coup Linked to Bush Team. That starts off, the failed coup in Venezuela was closely tied to senior officials in the U.S. government, the Observer has established. They have long histories in the, quote, dirty wars of the 1980s and links to death squads working in Central America at that time. Washington's involvement in the turbulent events that briefly removed Hugo Chavez from power last weekend resurrects fears about U.S. ambitions in the hemisphere. We'll talk a little bit about some of the people that were involved in the short-lived illegal U.S.-backed coup against Chavez in 2002 and why it's important today. Rama Schneider, sitting in for Tom Hartman. We are here!
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Waitsfield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
If it weren't for In These Times, I'd be a man without a country, says author Kurt Vonnegut. For more than 27 years, the progressive news magazine In These Times has provided groundbreaking coverage of movements for social, environmental, and economic justice. It is the publication the scholar and activist Cornel West calls the most creative and challenging news magazine of the American left.
In These Times features award-winning reporting and analysis of national and international news. Turn to In These Times for stories on civil liberties, the environment, labor, feminism, and much more. Writer Barbara Ehrenreich put it this way: to people who say they are sick of the corporate-dominated and celebrity-fixated media, I say, stop whining and subscribe to In These Times. Find In These Times on your newsstand or visit us online at www.inthesetimes.com or call 1-800-827-0270. That's 1-800-827-0270.
Can you imagine a world in which all kids live healthy, safe, productive, and prosperous lives? Well, that world is within our grasp, and there's a way to reach it. It's called Ecolonomics. And to learn more, just pull up DennisWeaverNow.com and learn how to get a free report of our Ecolonomics educational program and how together we can build a world of prosperity without pollution. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com. DennisWeaverNow.com.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. All the attention given to Halliburton and their no-bid contract in Iraq would make you think that it is not a regular practice. But a new report from the Center of Public Integrity reveals that at least $362 billion was spent on no-bid contracts by the Pentagon since 1998. But the Pentagon did not stop there, rewarding $255 billion in cost-plus contracts that allow companies to spend as much as they deem necessary on a job, including an agreed-upon profit.
How can there be hope when millions starve in a world of plenty? How can there be justice when the rich parade their wealth before the poor? How can there be peace when each man is his neighbor's enemy? In a world of chaos, peace is possible, but only if we address the root causes of our global crisis, poverty, hunger, and despair. We must share the world's resources to create justice. Without justice, there can be no peace. Fortunately, we're not alone in our efforts. According to futurist Benjamin Krem, a group of enlightened teachers led by Maitreya, the world teacher, is here to inspire a new approach based on the principle of sharing. With their guidance, we can transform the world and create a peaceful future for all. For a free audio CD of an extraordinary lecture by Benjamin Krem on the emergence of the teachers, call toll-free 888-242-8272. Again, that's 888-242-8272.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Sing it now, folks. Everybody's gonna be all right. Yeah.
All right. Rama Schneider back in for Tom Hartman. Obviously, it's why I lost my singing career at a very young age. I started trying to sing one time, and they threw me out. And that was when I was at home, no less. Well, that's the way it goes. Okay, we're talking a little bit about Venezuela because I'm trying to bring this around to Haiti. And the current mess that we've made of Haiti and that the Bushes tried to make of Venezuela. And it's because of three letters, O-I-L. And real quick, let me get to something here real fast. That one of the people involved, well, one was Elliot Abrams, who was one of the U.S. Administration officials involved with the attempted 2002 coup in Venezuela. The other was Otto Reich, a right-wing Cuban-American who under Reagan ran the Office for Public Diplomacy, reporting in theory to the State Department, but Reich was shown by congressional investigations to report directly to Reagan's national security aide, Colonel Oliver North, who's so proud to be a Marine, he wore his uniform in front of the front of Congress and then lied to their faces. Any Marine worth their salt should be spitting on that clown, yet somehow Oliver North is a hero of the wacko right. So we'll get to that in a moment here. You know, whenever we get somebody on the phone, it becomes important to talk to them. And this is Dave from Humboldt County. How you doing, Dave?
Oh, really great, Rahman. I'd been spending the first couple of hours more watching your man on the debate there on C-SPAN.
Yeah, I'm just to fill in space for him. That's all I am. He uses me. He abuses me.
I was going to give you an early report because... He was a real gentleman and by far the most intelligent and articulate. But if you watch these right-wing talk show people, you think that drug abuse is running rampant among them. They were all ranting and hollering and screaming. So it was a hard place to know if you weren't somebody that would be every bit as loud and crazy as they were to get a word in hardly.
They're all running these meth labs is what it is, Dave.
And when any liberal talk show host would make a point, they think of things like, that's your Democrat talking points. Like, do you have any talking points? That's right-wing stuff, I think. But.
Well, you know, in all fairness, look, the Democrats have their talking points, too. You know, all you need to do is listen to, if you can stand to, 3 hours of CNN or MSNBC or Fall News. And you'll hear, they'll bring on people from the Democrats, people from the Republicans. Everybody says the same thing all day long. Both sides have their talking points. That's a fair statement. This is what differentiates somebody like Tom and myself from the rest of these clowns running around talking on the massive media. You can hand me talking points, and I may pick up one or two of them because they make sense to me, but generally, I'm going to go out and I'm going to find the stuff that I think's important. And you run across things like this comparison between Haiti and Venezuela to show how screwed up the Bush foreign policy is. It doesn't get talked about in this country. How many times has the press talked about the U.S. backing of the Venezuela coup? And when was the last time you heard that China now has 95 armed military riot police in Haiti? China, folks, communist red China, and they've got another couple hundred on the way. When was the last time you heard that?
I don't hear it. I think when you get a call, you, Tom, from a Republican, usually they sort of been told how to say it and what to say and how to spin it.
Yeah.
And I don't think I hear any Democrats saying that. At least I don't think anybody's ever told me how to do it. Like you, I mean, if somebody's made a real good point and I've logged it in, that's something I agree with, that I'd maybe share it. But
all you got to do is get on the right email list. I guarantee you'll get Kerry talking points, Democrat talk. I get them from the Republicans and the Democrats. I try to get on all these mailing lists more because I'm interested in what everybody's going to say.
What to think and how to say it.
Absolutely. Hey, did you have more you want to say?
No, that's good.
Okay, hey, great. Thanks a lot, Dave. You have a great day out in California. All right. Well, I guess Tom's done over there on C-SPAN. He's going to be back Monday with everybody. I'm Rama Schneider. I'm filling in for Tom. We're going to carry on with this Venezuela coup stuff and some really kind of delightful information about it.
At last, there's a positive focus on a condition that affects millions. Read The Edison Gene, ADHD and the Gift of the Hunter Child by Tom Hartman, best-selling author of Attention Deficit Disorder, A Different Perception. John Rady, author of User's Guide to the Brain, says this about The Edison Gene.
Once again, with tireless scholarship and a bit of poetry, Tom Hartman helps take us to the edge of knowing ourselves, our brains, and our world.
The Edison Gene, available in bookstores everywhere.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
You're listening to WIN, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm Jesse Russell.
And I'm Doug Cunningham.
Ripples of the San Francisco hotel workers' lockout have begun hitting other major cities. 6 hotel workers were arrested in Boston Wednesday after joining nearly 85 others at a sit-in in the lobby of Hyatt Regency Hotel in Downtown Crossing. The protesters, mostly hotel service workers, were dispersed to the streets by police. Outside, they chanted, "No justice in San Francisco, no peace in Boston." More than 2,600 hotel workers in San Francisco remain locked out of their jobs after hotel owners refused to meet their demands for a 2-year contract and better health care.
Testing the limits of the union's conflict of interest clause, the St. Paul Pioneer Press newspaper in St. Paul, Minnesota, suspended two investigative reporters for attending a MoveOn.org concert. The reporters lost 3 days' pay and benefits after management said the paper's ethics policy bars them from activities that would conflict with their employment, like the Bruce Springsteen Vote for Change concert. The reporters argue they did nothing wrong, first, because MoveOn.org is nonpartisan, and second, because they don't cover politics. The paper, though, is refusing to back down. Minnesota Newspaper Guild Executive Officer Mike Sweeney.
We filed a grievance asking the company to rescind the suspension, return the money, and any other lost benefits. They have refused, so we will be moving, well, I've already moved the matter to arbitration, which is a hearing before a third party through that way to get the money restored.
Comcast is being called upon to adopt public interest provisions in pricing, customer service, workers' rights, community access TV, and open access internet. The code of conduct is being presented to the nation's largest cable company by a coalition of groups made up of the Communication Workers of America, the Coalition of Labor Union Women, Jobs for Justice, and others. The CWA has long been involved with holding Comcast accountable for labor issues and sponsors a website with the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers called ComcastWatch.com.
Union electricians and carpenters are picketing the construction site of a new Kroger supermarket in Ann Arbor, Michigan. The workers, represented by the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers, Local 252, are upset that the contractor is using out-of-town labor to get around a higher prevailing wage for local union members. They say that Bosselman Corporation isn't paying the level of wages set by the U.S. Labor Department for the local market in Ann Arbor. The union is asking members to boycott the store when it opens.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Social Security reform without minimizing it is of dire importance to African Americans. A recent study by the AARP reveals that 82.3% of African Americans, more than any other in the age group of 65 or older, rely on Social Security for retirement income. Of this group, 52.8% rely on benefits for 90% of their income. Retired African Americans receive only 23.9% of interest income. That's less than half of what is received by all Americans in the same age group.
You've been listening to WIND, Workers' Independent News. For more information, visit Labor Radio.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
I've been meek and hard like an oak. I've seen pretty people disappear like smoke. Friends will arrive, friends will disappear. If you want me...
All right, welcome back. Tom Hartman radio program. Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom. Tom is off today. He's done now, but he was on C-SPAN, too, just for a couple hours from noon to 2, I guess it was, Eastern time. Just basically insulting the right wing with common sense, facts, reality, that sort of thing. You know, they basically can't handle it. Tom will be back Monday, and even more fun come a week from today, next Friday. Tom Hartman will be right here behind his stainless steel working man's microphone. And the C-SPAN people are going to be here at Tom's home studio. And so we'll be able to watch Tom live and in action and see what a good host looks like as he sounds like. You know, it's be quite a treat. Anyway, let me get back to Venezuela. Oh, yeah. What's the phone number? 1-866-889. Shut up, Bob. 1-866-889-8894. I like Bob Dylan, but, you know, after a while, it gets a little tiresome. My gosh, come on, guy. Even I can play a song that takes 3 chords, okay, and 4 notes to play. I can even do that. I still sound like crap when I do it, but I can do it. Anyway, I want to get back to this Venezuela thing. Okay, we can kind of skip over. Elliot Abrams was one of them, and Otto Reich, who did all sorts of great work with the so lovely and honorable Oliver North, you know, who insulted every Marine and should have insulted everybody who ever wore a military uniform. Because he put on that Marine uniform for the Iran-Contra hearings and strutted his stuff in front of the U.S. Congress and lied. But, of course, that made him a darling of the right-wing political spectrum of the country, you know. So, but anyway, back to Venezuela, 2002. So just to kind of bring you up to date here, there was a coup that was immediately supported by the U.S. government. They said, that, no problem, we will recognize the government, and, you know, this guy Carmona. But, you know, it turned out that, hey, guess surprise, the Venezuelans really kind of liked Hugo Chavez as their president. So in a massive uprising, and this coup only lasted 4 days, even though it had the support of the military, right? In a massive uprising, the civilians in Venezuela, and pay attention, we might have to do this in another couple weeks, right, folks? They said, no, it ain't going to work, and they forced the coup leaders to bring Chavez back and reinstate him as president of Venezuela. That's how it worked. And so you had all these wonderful people involved in this coup. And even, let me see, the Organization of American States and other diplomatic sources talking to the British paper Observer back in 2002, assert that the U.S. administration was not only aware the coup was about to take place, but had sanctioned it, presuming it to be destined for success. There were visits by Venezuelans who were plotting the coup, including Carmona himself. Now, he was the guy who was installed as the head honcho. That began several months to the U.S. before the coup, and they were went up until just weeks before the coup, and the visitors were received at the White House. They were received at the White House by good old Ollie North-loving Otto Rake. And it's probably no coincidence that his last name is Rake, because anybody that could work with Oliver North has got to. Well, they have to have fond memories of the Gestapo, let's put it that way. So that coup didn't work. And then what they've tried to do, they started going down there with the National Endowment for Democracy, which is a government-funded agency who's supposedly supposed to go down and spread how democracy works. But, you know, as anything our government does, it tries to spread democracy that reaches our aims as the United States' aims and nobody else's. And in the process of doing this, they managed to convince the people who were working at the for Venezuelan's oil industry. And Venezuela, you know, is an oil-rich state. It's like the something like fifth or seventh largest oil producer, so to speak, in the world, and I think it's number four on the list of people who export to the U.S. for the amount of oil they export. And so they managed to really get they managed to get these people to go on strike against Chavez. Now, it was a very small group of people. It was actually the workers didn't go on strike. I take that back. There was a lockout done by the rich people who were running the oil industry. So we have a position where they tried a coup in 2002. It didn't work, and Chavez got back. So they still wanted to go and undermine Hugo Chavez, the Bush administration did. So which brings us up to this January 26, 2003 article from The Observer. This is, okay, mind you, the date, January 26, 2003. We did the invasion of Iraq thing in March 2003. This is important. Facing its most chronic shortage in oil stocks for 27 years, the U.S. has this month turned to an unlikely source of help, Iraq. Weeks before a prospective invasion of Iraq, the oil-rich state has doubled its exports of oil to America, helping U.S. refineries cope with a debilitating strike in Venezuela. The strike was really a lockout, like I said. This is it. That's January 2003. After the loss of 1.5 million barrels per day of Venezuelan production in December, the oil price rocketed and the scarcity of reserves threatened to do permanent damage to the U.S. oil refinery and transport infrastructure. To keep the pipelines flowing, President Bush stopped adding to the 700 million barrel strategic reserve, but ultimately oil giants such as Chevron, Exxon, BP and Shell saved the day by, get this, doubling imports from Iraq from a half million barrels in November to over 1 million barrels per day to solve the problem. This trade, though bizarre, given current Pentagon plans to launch around 300 cruise missiles a day on Iraq, is legal under the terms of the UN's Oil for Food program. That's right, folks. After supporting an unsuccessful coup in Venezuela, losing on that, then getting the people who ran the Venezuelan oil industry to lock out the workers, they then had to turn to Iraq, who we were just getting ready to invade anyway. Maybe that had something to do with oil. But we turned to Iraq for oil. Well, for Iraqi oil, what they did. I mean, we weren't getting it directly from Iraq. So, okay. This brings us back. This brings us back, actually, to two things. Brings us back to the article I started talking about, this whole Venezuela thing. U.S. lifts arms embargo on Haiti as tensions mount. Okay? Now, remember, just like we talked with Hugo Chavez, a U.S.-supported attempted coup. However, for the Venezuelan side, it didn't work. But it did work in Haiti. I mean, Aristide, he didn't have much going for him. And the poor people in Haiti knew darn well that if they hit the streets to revolt at the wrong time, they were dead meat. And because we had rearmed all the drug gang thugs that Clinton had chased out of Haiti back in the early 90s. Well, I don't know. So now the world, though, has lost Iraq's oil. Because we've invaded Iraq. Which doesn't matter now, because now we get Venezuela's oil back. Because despite what we did to Hugo Chavez, he's not going to stop exporting oil to the United States. But in a USA Today article, they point out that the costs and benefits of America's occupation of Iraq vary according to proponents and opponents. Except when it comes to oil exports, the U.S.-led invasion has resulted in the loss of an average of 2 million barrels a day of Iraqi oil from world markets. Good job, George. You did a really, really great job. 1-866-889-8894. Let's see, what else have they been doing a good job? I'm not going to do it. We don't have a whole lot of time left. It's about 17 minutes before the top of the hour. I'm not going to do it. As far as I'm concerned, this Bush administration is a total, complete, unmitigated, utter disaster. And if he's back in office, it's the worst thing that could happen to this country. But we will get over it, and I am not going to fall down to this thing of fear. I refuse to. So you know what? We got a weekend coming up. We got a weekend where people got to get out there. They got to be strong. You got to get out there with a smile on your face. You know, I go out and I've been trying to make time. Get out and I have the sign. On one side it says, veteran, support the troops, vote carry. It's a sign very, very specifically directed at veterans. On the other side it says, veteran, Bush lied, others died, vote carry. And I stand out in the street, and I have a couple good places where I like to stand and bury. And, the people go by, and whatever the reactions are. We all need to get out and do some little thing. You know, it doesn't matter. For some of you folks that maybe are in Ohio or Florida or New Mexico or wherever the heck you're at, for some of you folks, it's going to be getting out to get people to the polls to vote, like that gentleman I scratched his name off. I can't read it anymore. They called from Illinois. Was over kind of on the Illinois-Iowa border, if I remember correctly, he said, where he was taking some people to go vote today. This is the sort of things that we can do. It's positive. It's uplifting. It's friendly. It puts a smile on your face. And, you know, doing these little things will empower you on a personal level. Honestly, it gives you a feeling, I can do something. I don't just have to sit here I do not just have to sit here and take whatever is thrown my way. I can actually influence events. Now, maybe, let me tell you, it just may be in your position, you can't influence events in a big way. Maybe you can just influence events in a little way. Let me go back to my sign. I don't say veterans on my sign. Well, for two reasons, in all honesty. One reason is I didn't have room for the S. But there's another reason. I am just trying to reach one veteran at a time. Just one. A little bitty thing. But that's all I'm trying to do. I'm not trying to reach all the veterans in the world at one time and tell them, look, how can you guys support this administration? The Republican Party as it exists today hates the military. All you got to do is go look at those Purple Heart bandages they were wearing on the floor of the Republican National Convention, making fun of war wounds. Tell me these Republicans like them. They hate the military. They use it. They use it so that the rich Republicans can get even richer, while the poor Republicans they know will be BS'd into signing up because it's the right thing to do, and they'll go off and lose life and limb. So the rich Republicans, anyway, I'm getting negative again. I don't want to do that. We have the power to do little things in our lives, you know. And when I get out there in the sign with my sign that says veteran on it, I am specifically, I'm pointing at just one veteran at a time. Just one at a time. And you know what I also do? I smile and have a good time while I'm out there doing it, folks. I get a majority of positive responses. Okay, but I do get some negative responses, and some of them are pretty funny. It's the people, for instance, who want to give me the finger. And I smile and I wave back at them as they're going by. And they're just getting all agitated. Their hands moving up and down. And it's like they're going, no, I'm not giving you a thumbs up, you moron. It's the middle finger. And I'm waving and smiling, having a good time. I enjoy myself. This is what we all got to do. Learn, get out there and do something that you're going to enjoy. If you like meeting people and you have good transportation, get out there and drive people to the polls. Because you'll meet people. And you know what? Let me tell you something, too. Even if they say they're Republican, give them a ride. Good deeds beget good deeds, ladies and gentlemen. It's the honest to God truth. Maybe you've got some time during busy rush hours. Maybe you live around one of the larger population centers. You guys get a real rush hour here in Vermont. It's a rush hour is more than three cars in a five-minute period on any given stretch of road. So maybe you're in an area where there's a high traffic, high-volume traffic. Get out there with some signs and stand there. Make a short, pithy statement. Don't make a long statement. People are driving. Basically, you should probably, I figured it out for me, eight words or less. I know I go up to 10, I think, on one side, but I try to aim for eight words at the most. That's another positive thing you can do. Don't drive yourself crazy with face-to-face arguments with people at this stage of the game. Everybody's very wrapped up and wound tight right now about the election. So the worst thing you can probably do is get out there and get in some screaming hissy fit with some con. Because all they're going to do is point and say, yeah, look at that wild-eyed, wacko, left-wing freak. And you're going to be walking away going, yeah, look at that wild-eyed, wacko, right-wing freak. And in the meantime, there's no information imparted. At this stage of the game, and the reason the campaigns have gone to scare tactics, is because people are not going to change their mind. There's a few out there that might, but they're going to change their mind driving past and seeing the sign on their way home. It's going to make them think. It really will make them think. Let's get out there, have a good time. Let's be politically active. Empower yourself. Do things, little things, because those are the real empowering. We can't all run major corporations.
Bonjour, my name is Michel, and I founded the Organic Wine Company with my sister 25 years ago. If you love wine and have not tried our French wines yet, you are in for a treat. Nowadays, people everywhere are buying organic fruits and vegetables because they know they taste better. Organic grapes are so luscious that when turned into wine, you can really taste the difference. Our wines are delicious and eco-friendly, so I want to make it very easy for you to try them out. Call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE and I will send you three of my favorite organic French wines at half their regular price. That's just $25 plus shipping. C'est magnifique! And if you don't agree, I will gladly refund your money. So take me up on my offer and call me right away at 1-888-ECO-WINE, which is E-C-O-W-I-N-E. Au revoir.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek since Kurt Vonnegut was at his peak. Mike is an Iowa author, former federal prisoner for peace, small-town newspaper reporter, seminarian, and nominee for the U.S. House of Representatives in the Iowa Democratic Party 2000 election. For more information and more about Mike's other novels, visit iowapeace.com. The revolution won't be televised, but you can read about it. The Last Liberal Outlaw, A New American Revolution, is happening in the heartland.
Hi, I'm David Orrick. In vacuums, bagless is a dirty word. A leading consumer testing magazine warns, if you're sensitive to dust, avoid bagless vacuums. And if you own one, they advise you to wear a dust mask. I would never put the Oric name on a bagless vacuum. They're filthy. My hypoallergenic Oric XL uses triple-walled disposable filter bags. They hold four times more than the leading brand of bagless vacuums. What goes in the Oric bag stays in the bag, including bacteria and viruses. Empty a bagless vacuum, and the dust goes right back into the room you've just cleaned. Is this sanitary? Oric cleans the air as it vacuums the floor. Try my 8-pound Oric XL risk-free for 30 days. Call 1-800-989-4200. 1-800-989-4200. It's the clean alternative to bagless vacuums.
A California researcher examines the connection between air pollution and dairy cows. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. New legislation in California requires some dairy farmers to control emissions from their herds of cows, and the law is controversial. Many people think the state government has overstated the impact of cows on air quality. Frank Mittliner wants to get a better understanding of just what is in dairy air. Mittliner is an air quality specialist with the University of California at Davis.
Right now, the so-called emission inventories in California put the cows as number two, only surpassed by cars as a pollutant source. And many people have their doubts that that's the case.
Mittliner says big problems with air pollution from dairy herds involve gas and dust. The animal waste can release various gases, including ammonia, and dust often comes from dried-out manure that gets kicked up by the cows themselves. Mittliner wanted to study air emissions around cows in a setting that's typical for a dairy operation, so he built four structures that look like greenhouses with dirt floors, and each one encloses a herd of 10 heifers. Now he's monitoring the air that comes in and goes out of each structure while the cows go about their regular business.
We measured the incoming air and the outgoing air, and therefore we can determine everything that is produced by cows and their waste by means of air emissions.
As Mittliner and his colleagues monitor their small herds, they'll get a better understanding of what kind of air pollution and how much of it comes from cows. Mittliner says the findings will be released early next year. He says they should provide a more current and accurate assessment of what dairy cows contribute to regional air pollution. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Democracy to the United States of America. Here's Tom Hartman.
Schneider. Yeah, feeling all right. Yeah, it's Singing Brothers. Well, I am. All right, Rama Schneider sitting in for Tom Hartman. He'll be back with you all Monday, coming up to about 5 minutes before the top of the hour. Just a quick nod to, you know, anybody's out there, a Red Sox fan. Once again, the Red Sox did the unthinkable. And for those that don't care about baseball, that's all I'm going to say about it. Except for this little bit that comes to us from the Borowitz Report. Steinbrenner acquires nuclear weapon. He trades Alex Rodriguez to Kim Jong-il. New York Yankees owner George Steinbrenner acquired a nuclear weapon today in a transaction that sent slugger Alex Rodriguez and an undisclosed sum of cash to North Korean dictator Kim Jong-il, while national security experts were divided over what possible use Kim might have for the all-star infielder. There was unanimity of opinion about Mr. Steinbrenner's plans for his newly minted nuclear arsenal. The warhead that George Steinbrenner has acquired, if deployed on a ballistic missile he already owns, could reach Fenway Park in a matter of minutes, said Donaldson Tobin of the University of Minnesota. Dr. Tobin, who studies the complex web of relationships between rogue states and baseball owners, said that no one should be surprised by the transaction between Mr. Steinbrenner and Kim Jong-il. They've been friends since the late 1980s when they met at an Axis of Evil golf outing in Scottsdale. As for the deal itself, Dr. Tobin believes that Mr. Steinbrenner may have gotten the better of his North Korean counterpart. For all we know, Kim Jong-il may think that A-Rod means the same thing as fuel rod. Meanwhile, on the campaign trail in Ohio, Democratic presidential nominee John Kerry blasted President George W. Bush for allowing a weapon of mass destruction to fall into the hands of the mercurial Yankees owner. Thanks to the failed policies of George Bush, it is now easier to get a nuclear weapon than a flu shot, Mr. Kerry said. Elsewhere, Theresa Hines Kerry apologized for saying that Laura Bush had never had a real job, noting that for the past 27 years, Mrs. Bush has been working with the mentally impaired George W. Now, there you have it. All right. We got a really great weekend coming up here. Everybody get out there, have fun, do something constructive, enjoy life. The man, Tom Hartman, be back with you on Monday. And then on Friday, you're even going to be able to see him on C-SPAN. That's going to be really exciting. I can't wait. I'm going to watch him on C-SPAN. Rama Schneider filled in for Tom Hartman for today. Thanks to Ira. Thanks to Luis. Thanks to me. Thanks to you. Thanks to everybody. See y'all. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Visit iowapeace.com for books on justice and peace. The Last Liberal Outlaw is Mike Palasek's new novel. Chuck Gregory with BlueEar.com had this to say. Palasek is at his best when writing about small-town America. It's a place he clearly loves, even as he pokes fun at its quirks and reveals the sickness that lies just below the surface. It's a place he knows, and he shares his knowledge in delightfully original ways, even as he cries out for change. We haven't had a writer like Palasek.